Good afternoon and welcome to the Volusia County School Board meeting. Today is Tuesday, April 26. We will call this meeting to order. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, and once again, welcome to the Volusia County School Board meeting. I'd like to start off by introducing all of the amazing folks that are around the dais with me. We'll start off on the left-hand side with Mr. Carl Persis, representative for District 4. Next to Mr. Persis, we have Mrs. Linda Cuthbert, representative for District 3. Next to Ms. Cuthbert, we have our school board attorney, Mr. Ted Doran, the Honorable Ted Doran. Over here on the right-hand side, we have our amazing agency clerk, Ms. Erin Lieben. Next to Ms. Lieben, we have Mrs. Anita Burnett, representative for District 2. Next to Mrs. Burnett, we have Ms. Jamie Haynes, vice chairwoman from District 1. And next to Mrs. Haynes, we have our superintendent, Rachel Hazel, who is here today. And I am Ruben Colon, representative for District 5, and I have the pleasure of serving as the chair for this year. Items for approval on this agenda are 3.01, 6.02, 19.01. There will be several opportunities for the public to weigh in and provide public comment. There is a time certain at 6 o'clock where we will start no sooner than that to go ahead and listen to public comment. At that time, we will allot 15 minutes for comment. After that, before we vote on any board action item, we will call for public comment as well. And at the end of the meeting, if there are any additional cards for public comment, we will listen to those at that time. Next up, we have item 1.02, District Vision Statement and Board Member Comments. Where will we start today? Ms. Haynes.
Thank you. So there's been a lot of things going on that are wonderful for our students and for all of our staff. And last week, there was a lot going on. But I have to honestly say that we have to give a shout out to the group that worked together to put on the teen job fairs. I was at the one on the west side of the county along with Mr. Colon, and we had 507 people walk through the door at the center at Deltona looking for, you know, with their children or whatever, looking for jobs. And all of the companies and businesses that came, they did a great job with the kids. And we're looking to hire them. But in addition to not only looking to hire our students, some of them walked out of there that night with applications for even some of our parents. So some of our parents even got a chance to fill out an application who are looking for jobs. So I am so happy that we started this last year, and I hope that we continue it because I think it's just a win-win. And I've already got a list of people that didn't participate but heard about it and are interested in participating in the next one that we have. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Haynes. Next up, Ms. Cuthbert.
Good afternoon, everyone. This time of year, everyone is always so excited when athletes commit to colleges. Spring football, probably, this is spring, right? Yeah, spring football is coming around, baseball starting. But I think one of the most celebrations for me is our academics. So I'm delighted to see Deltona Middle, who science, yeah, got in for Lego and STEM. Congratulations to all of you and your competition. We also have Science Olympiad winners in the audience tonight. Congratulations to you and your competitions. And also, I was at the Battle for the Books at Deltona. I'm on the other side of the county. Daytona Library. Regional Library, and we had all the middle schools except for a couple represented. So congratulations to all, and it's so nice to see our middle schools rise. They are the cream at the top, and they always rise. So thank you guys very much, and congratulations on your competitions and your success, because we all are lifelong learners, are we not?
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Burnett.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody, and it's so nice to see all the Science Olympiad participants here. And both of my sons participated in that in middle school and high school. So it's always been fun for me to go watch some of the things that are invented by kids. It's amazing because I can't think that I would ever have that much thought to put in and creativity. So great job. And I attended the Atlantic academic signing today, and it was so fun because, you know, like you said, we always have the sports signing, which is great because I'm a sports fan, but it's nice to see us celebrate the academics too, and that's very important. And they had a really good group and a really good turnout, and it was very exciting. And this was their first one, and sounds like they're going to make this an annual event. It was very good. So thank you.
Mr. Persis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great comments, everybody. You all are so right. There's always so much going on at our schools. Unfortunately, I've been battling a upper respiratory infection for the last 3 weeks. So if you want to know anything about a Z-Pak or steroids, throat lozenges, I can attest to those things, but haven't been in schools much the last 2 weeks. It's certainly nice seeing students and their teachers here and receiving awards and accolades for the great job that you all are doing. Just keep it up. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Hazel.
Well, it has been a busy week, and you all have highlighted some of my favorite things that I've been to, the teen job fair especially, and some of the things. But I also wanted to point out we had our job fair for teachers the last week as well. And although we don't have a human resources update to share, I am proud that I talked with Ms. Field earlier today, and she told me that we had hired 100 more teachers than we hired at the job fair last year. So we are up to almost 200. 200 new teachers joining our family is pretty exciting to me.
Great. Thank you. And so this weekend, I had the pleasure of joining Ms. Haynes at the VOL Fun Walk at Gemini Springs. Dozens of families came out. We had a great time walking. So congratulations to our VOL team for the work they did there. Ms. Lafice at Osteen Elementary, they threw the Little Mermaid. It was amazing, amazing. And, you know, I think the kids don't realize this, but parents about my age were singing along to every single Little Mermaid song. And I think we enjoyed it slightly more than the kids did because that's from our time, but we won't tell anybody. And also we had the kindergarten, first grade performances at Pride Elementary. That, of course, was a great time. And kudos to the admin team and the music department at Pride Elementary for that. And today's a really exciting day for me because I see a lot of my Deltona schools out there. So I'm not going to talk about any of that because we'll have time to talk about that later. All right. Anybody else? Anything else? All right, next up, 2.01. Superintendent, are there any changes to the agenda?
Yes, Mr. Chair, there are. Item 8.04 is going to be removed from the agenda. That is the printed and digital textbooks for math adoptions. We'll be putting that on our next agenda in light of recent events. And then we have a few items added to the agenda. Item 14.02, district insurance and administrative contract renewals. Item 4.03, property insurance renewal. Item 15.09, approval of settlement, fleet liability claim. And 19.01, approval of the interim superintendent's employment agreement.
Great, thank you. Board, you've heard the changes to the agenda. Ms. Haynes.
So since we're removing 8.04, I had a question about item 12.07 and if that needed to be removed also, because it's for the printed and digital math textbooks.
So that item, actually, I'm looking out to see if Ms. Kraft, that item is actually for the company through which we purchase it through, but it's not for the actual materials adoption. We pulled off the ones that have the specified materials adoption, but that one is just a contract with the company that we pulled.
Any other questions? Ms. Burnett?
Yes, thank you. And so the books for 8.05 and 8.06, were they affected by anything?
They are not. 8.05 is the textbooks for chorus, mm-hmm. and 8.06 are the textbooks for social studies, and those are actually what we call gap year purchases. So that's during the year that we're actually selecting materials. That is a year where we still have to make a purchase of materials. But it's not under the official adoption, and those are not part of the math adoption.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Board, you've heard the amended changes to the agenda. Do we have a motion to approve the agenda as amended?
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we approve the agenda for tonight's meeting.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
I second it.
Motion's been properly made by Ms. Cuthbert, seconded by Mrs. Haynes. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we will pass the agenda for this evening. Next up, we have administrative appointments. Mrs. Superintendent.
Yes, I am going to ask Mr. John Kraft to come forward, please. Hi, Mr. Kraft.
Hi, ma'am.
So it is my pleasure to recommend Mr. Kraft for Assistant Director of Maintenance and Operations. Mr. Kraft has been with Volusia County Schools since 2013 when he started with us as an office specialist. Since that time, he served as coordinator in facilities and maintenance and coordinator of environmental. He has a bachelor's degree from Embry-Riddle and a master's degree from Embry-Riddle. And it is my recommendation that he be appointed Assistant Director of Maintenance and Operations effective tomorrow.
If tomorrow, wow. All right, Board, you've heard the recommendation to appoint Mr. John Kraft as the Assistant Director for Maintenance and Operations Department. Do we have a motion?
Move approval.
I second.
Motion's been properly made by Mr. Persis, seconded by Ms. Cuthbert. Any further discussion?
I have one comment.
Cuthbert?
Mr. Kraft, over a quite all these years, you have been asked to do a lot of things. And I say things because it's been on all spectrums, whether it's maintenance, whether it's buying equipment, whether it's administrating or taking care of employees, looking things over, I mean, double-checking. You've always been there, and you've always been a reliable source. So I just want to thank you for your service so far. And now you're going to be really held accountable. So I wish you all the best, and we have absolutely no reservations whatsoever. We all know that you're going to do a great job. So thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Hearing none. Oh, Mr. Persis.
Well, just to reiterate a little bit, you are really awesome. You have held a lot of jobs and titles and hats, and sometimes without a whole lot of warning. We just said, John can do it, you know, so we give it to you, and you always come through with flying colors. And by the way, so does your wife. So I just want to throw that out. Maria, and is she here?
Yes.
Where? You are amazing, too, over there in purchasing department. But well, anyway, we are fortunate to have such a great couple working in our school district.
We always know that behind every great man is a better woman. Thank you.
Well, I will say that I never put one and one together until right now. And so now I understand.
They are dynamite.
Because behind every great man, there's a great woman. So now that explains it. It makes it clear. Board, you've heard the recommendation. We had a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion passes. Mr. Kraft, I'm sure you've got your speech laid out as you're going to thank your wife.
Yes, sir, but I do have a tight time constraint. But I do, good afternoon, everyone, board members, chair, Ms. Hazel. Thank you for the opportunity. You know, it's a professional goal that I've had for a while to be able to get an increased amount of responsibility. We have such a great team of support people here, both in maintenance and in all the departments in the district, and we all have the same goals here. I mean, it's all about the students. So with this responsibility, I'm going to be holding myself accountable and definitely looking to see how we can help the students in the classrooms and reaching out with open communication to the maintenance and operations department, hearing what they have to offer and help and empower them to make some good decisions. We have a great team here, so really I just want to help lead where I can, and this is a great opportunity. Thank you to Maria for all her support and my maintenance family. So thank you again for the opportunity.
Awesome. And
hey.
And for those of you that don't know, we are transitioning back our custodial staff and maintenance folks back to the district instead of being outsourced to the company. So we are extremely glad that we are starting to build that infrastructure up so our schools will be clean. Voted already, didn't we? Yeah, we voted.
Did we?
We can vote again. All those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed say nay.
Yeah, because we made a motion, and then you had discussion, and then we do have to vote.
Good catch.
Voted, but okay. We voted.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. There we go. All right, Miss.
All right, now I would like Janice Faust to come up, please. And while she's coming up, so Mr. Kraft is leaving the coordinator position for environmental. And so talk about succession planning. Here is Ms. Faust. She began her career with Volusia County Schools in 2006 as an office specialist. She has worked as a specialist in maintenance and operations, trade specialist in maintenance, and supervisor in trade maintenance and operations. And I am very pleased to recommend Ms. Faust as our next coordinator for environmental services.
Thank you, Board. You've heard the recommendation of the superintendent to appoint Ms. Janice Faust as the environmental coordinator for the maintenance and operations department. Do we have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Do we have a second?
I second.
Motion has been made by Ms. Anita Burnett, seconded by Ms. Haynes. Any further discussion?
Okay. Now, could you tell us a little bit, especially for the audience, about what your job will entail? What will you do for environmental services?
It'll mainly be focusing on the custodial program and the new schools that we're bringing in this year. So getting them up and ready, getting everyone trained, and just getting the environments up to what we're all hoping to see, and working with the principals hand in hand. So that'll be fun.
That's wonderful. That's an awful lot. Thank you very much, and I wish you well on the expansion of the pilot program. So thank you.
Thank you, Board. We've had a motion and a second. We'll go ahead and call the vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay. Congratulations. Aye. Would you?
Good afternoon, School Board and Mrs. Hazel. I just wanted to
Can you hold the mic just a little closer to you so we can hear you? There we go.
I just wanted to take this time to thank you for the opportunity for me to be able to serve the district in this new capacity. Throughout my time with the school board, I was with the training department, I've been with maintenance, and I've served it in many different capacities, and this one here I'm really looking forward to. I think that getting out there and meeting with all the principals and getting out into each and every school and just making it the best learning environment that we can for our students. So thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you so much, and please hang out for a picture as soon as we're done here.
Thank you.
Our next appointment is, I'm going to ask Stephanie Workman to come forward, please. And as she's coming forward, part of my former role was labor relations and all things human resources, which payroll is a part of. So don't worry. I see some worried looks out there already. Ms. Workman is not giving up payroll. Mm-hmm. However, her job role is expanding, and it is my pleasure to recommend her for Interim Director of Human Resources. Let me tell you a little bit about Stephanie, and this is going to take longer because her journey started in 2004 with Volusia County Schools as a hospital homebound teacher. Since that time, she served as teacher on assignment, middle school assistant principal, instructional specialist, coordinator for ESE programs, coordinator for reporting requirements and tech services, coordinator at Legacy Scholars, coordinator of master schedule back in technology services, and currently the coordinator in payroll. Ms. Workman earned her bachelor's degree from West Virginia State University and her master's and her specialist degree from Marshall University. And I am thrilled to be able to recommend her for Interim Director of Human Resources.
Thank you, Board. You've heard the recommendation of the superintendent to appoint Ms. Stephanie Workman as the Interim Director of Human Resources. Do we have a motion?
I'd like to make the motion that Ms. Workman be the, and I really want the interim word to go away, I'll be honest with you, but the Director for Human Resources.
Second.
Motion has been properly made by Ms. Haynes, seconded by Ms. Cuthbert. Any discussion? Ms. Haynes.
So I've known Stephanie for years, and it doesn't matter what's thrown at her, whatever job they ask her to do, she steps up to the plate and she does it, and she does it beautifully. And when she took on payroll, and we all know how that important that was, and she stepped in and cleaned it up and made sure people were getting paid and all that, I felt then she should have already been made a director. So I think this has been a long time coming, and I'm so happy tonight to be able to support her in this role, and I know she'll continue to do a wonderful job.
Thank you. Anybody else?
You've always been a whiz with numbers. You have such a keen mind. You see things that sometimes I can't even imagine. So it's remarkable that you, and that's why she's had so much, you've plugged in so many ways, much like Mr. Kraft, you've always been plugging in. And it's amazing that you have such unique talents that you're successful at everything you do. So thank you for this new role, because it is too very tasking. Is that a good word? Tasking. So, but thank you. Thank you for filling in. Thank you so much. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Anybody else? All right. Hearing none. We had a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion passes.
Yay.
Superintendent Hazel, Chairman Cologne, board members, thank you for your confidence in me to serve as the Interim Director of Human Resources. When I started my career in education 25 years ago, I could have never imagined the path it would take. From teaching high school mathematics to working in ESE, technology services, payroll, and now HR, the path has not been one of logical progression, which is ironic considering my logical background. I learned early in my career the importance of servant leadership and always took advantage of opportunities to gain experience and grow. You do not know how many times the phrases, "we need you to," or "will you take on," have been said to me. Each time I learned from the individuals I worked with and always felt I left the experience better than when I started. From being a school-based administrator to a district administrator in many facets, each group of coworkers not only helped me grow as an employee, but to also grow as a leader. At the end of the day, it is your team that truly deserves the credit for what is accomplished, not just you as the leader. I would like to publicly thank each of the teams I have worked with through the years, for I would not be here today if it weren't for you. I also want to take a moment and thank my mother, who unfortunately couldn't be here this evening, a former educator herself, for always instilling in me the importance of hard work and dedication to your career. I love and appreciate your continuous support. Lastly, I want to thank my wife, Andrea, for always supporting my latest career endeavor. Without your constant love and support, I would not be the person I am today. Thank you, and I know I have some big shoes to fill.
Thank you, and please hang out for a picture as soon as we're done.
All right, Mr. Jonathan Pierce. And while he's coming forward, so here is another story of successful succession planning. After 38 years with Volusia County Schools, Ms. Kathy Gibbons is retiring. So I think, yes. What a wonderful tribute to your impact and your legacy, Ms. Gibbons. We appreciate all you've done for our students throughout the years. However, Mr. Pierce, assistant principal at Taylor, will be our recommendation for the principal of Taylor Middle High School. Mr. Pierce began his career with Volusia County Schools in 2000, where he served as a teacher at DeLand High School, teacher on assignment University High School, assistant principal Deltona Middle, and you're also a teacher at DeLand Middle School, correct?
DeLand Middle.
Yes, I remember a student you had there that lived with me. And then, and also assistant principal at Taylor Middle High School, and he earned his bachelor's degree and master's degree from Stetson University, and it is a privilege to recommend him as the next principal for Taylor Middle High School.
Wonderful. Board, you've heard the recommendation to appoint Mr. Jonathan Pierce as the principal of Taylor Middle High. Do we have a motion?
I happily make the motion for Mr. Pierce to be the principal at Taylor Middle High.
I second it.
Wonderful. Board, we have a motion by Ms. Haynes, seconded by Mr. Persis. Any discussion, Ms. Haynes?
So, yes, Kathy's leaving after 38 years. But you've been there the last few years working side by side with her, and that community is a special community. And some of those community members sat on that panel to even interview. And you know, you were their top pick. And I think that's what Ms. Gibbons was hoping for. And I know that you're going to continue to do wonderful things there. And she's still a phone call away. And I'm a phone call away if I can help you in any way. But I want to thank you. I want to thank you for going up there as an assistant principal and embracing that community and caring about all of our students up there. And as I kind of told your wife earlier, maybe we can twist her arm and get her up in that community at some point, too. But I'm looking forward to next year.
Thank you.
Very good. Anyone else?
Go ahead.
I've listened to all your accolades. You've always been on the west side. I'm a kind of an east side kind of girl. So I apologize for not meeting you sooner, but I want to congratulate you, because if Ms. Gibbons can give you her blessing, there you go, I think you're going to be very, very successful. And if you want to know any stories, I know lots of stories about that young lady back there. Okay. She began her internship in her administration with my husband at Atlantic High School. So I got to know her at the very beginning, which I think that's wonderful, but I regret not having that opportunity with you. So I wish you the best of luck, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Persis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Congratulations. I know you're excited. It's a big deal. Becoming a principal, you know, it's a big deal. And I look at your background. You were an assistant principal at a middle school, and you survived. So that says something for you. Your assistant principal over there at Taylor, every time I've been to Taylor, and maybe half a dozen times in the last couple of years, I've always run into you. You're always around, and you're always polite. You're always professional. You just seem to have the right background. Mentored by superstar Kathy back there, she's like awesome, and it's as Ms. Haynes said, just knowing that your faculty, your community wants you. I mean, what could be a better compliment than to get that? So I certainly wish you the best. I am not a phone call away. you can call Dr. Berrio or Ms. Carpenell. They are phone calls away, and you should get their cell phone numbers and call them constantly. And that's what we hire them for. All right.
Thank you.
Best wishes to you. I know you'll be super.
Thank you. And one thing I could say about Mr. Pierce is he knows his students. You know, he knows, hey, that student's missing half a credit of this and that. And so I'm grateful to you for that and your service. Board, we had a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say nay. Congratulations.
Yay. Good afternoon, School Board Chair Cologne, members Burnett, Cuthbert, and Persis, and our own District 1, Ms. Jamie Haynes, and Superintendent Hazel. Thank you for the honor to serve as the next principal of T. DeWitt Taylor Middle High School. I began my career as an educator at DeLynn Middle School when John Pulcinelli took a chance on a wide-eyed young man who wanted to change the world. In 2013, I transitioned to Deltona Middle School as an assistant principal before moving on to Taylor in 2018. Throughout my career, I've had the pleasure of learning from several people what an exemplary teacher and administrator is. Terry Calkins and Melissa Cassell, my first assistant principals, thank you for always being there at the beginning and always encouraging our creativity and value of putting our students first. Neither of them ever flinched when Christy Mahaney, Susie Peterson, Liz Pierce, and I would approach them with our next greatest social studies lesson and adventure. From turning the auditorium into the Caves of Lascaux with garbage bags and overturned desks, to building Mount Everest in the media center, to reenacting the Oregon Trail with shopping carts. As administrators, they both provided constant encouragement and friendship that stays with me today. Bill Dunnigan and Dr. Rick Inge, without the two of you, I would not be here today. If not for Mr. Dunnigan slipping into almost every conversation, you'll make a great administrator one day. I don't think I would have pursued my degree. When I did become an assistant principal, Dr. Inge was my first principal. He always encouraged me to develop my leadership skills, and he provided the opportunities to learn every aspect of school leadership. And Ms. Kathy Gibbons, Taylor's current principal, Thank you for your leadership and facilitating my learning and growing as an administrator. To all three, as we always say, once a Wildcat, always a Wildcat. Ms. Brandy Hoag, thank you for your guidance, advice, and always answering our crazy what-if questions. With my whole heart, I must thank my wife, Liz Pierce. Starting out as friends, when I'd almost given up my dream of becoming a teacher, she encouraged me to apply for a job at DeLand Middle School, starting me on the path that has led me here today. She has provided guidance and advice throughout my whole career. You make me a better person every day by your light that shines so brightly. How long will I love you? As long as the stars are above you, and longer if I can. Growing up in a small Florida town like Pearson, I had several people who modeled what a master teacher should be. One of these teachers was my high school band director, Mr. Dean Castles. Mr. Castles not only taught us how to play instruments, but interspersed everyday skills lessons with life lessons. Many of his Castle-isms, as we call them, stick with me today. Once during my senior year, I spoke with Mr. Castles regarding my desire to become a teacher, and his advice is my why to this day. Make sure your students leave your classroom a better person than when they entered it. When Mr. Castles passed, his impact could be seen in the over 200 former students from three school districts that attended his funeral. As I take this next step in my career, this is my goal for the students of Taylor Middle High School, that when they walk across the stage to receive their diploma, they are a better person than when they arrived as a sixth grader. To the Wildcat students, faculty, and community, I look forward to serving as your principal, striving to push Taylor Middle High School to its fullest potential. Thank you.
Thank you.
And last but not least, Mr. Jay Strother, please come forward. I'm proud to recommend Mr. Strother for principal of Highbanks Learning Center. Mr. Strother started as a teacher at Deltona Middle in 1997 with our district. He also taught at Heritage Middle School, Pine Ridge High School, DeLand High School, New Smyrna Beach Middle School. He was a student advocate at New Smyrna Beach Middle School, served as assistant principal at Holly Hill, Creekside, and Spruce Creek High School, and is now at a principal intern at Creekside Middle School. And he earned his bachelor's degree from the University of Central Florida and his master's degree in educational leadership from Grand Canyon University. I'm proud to recommend Mr. Strother for principal at Highbanks Learning Center.
Already heard the recommendation of the superintendent to appoint Mr. Jay Struthers as the principal of Highbanks Learning Center. Do we have a motion?
I make the motion that we appoint him as the principal at Highbanks Learning Center, which I'm excited about.
Sure. Do we have a second?
And you forgot something in your resume. He's also a graduate of New Smyrna Beach High School. He's a Barracuda and one of mine. You told me 33 years ago you sat in my ninth grade class. Okay, I just want to let you know.
Wow.
I think that's fabulous. I just want to congratulate you. I know we haven't voted yet, but I'm just so glad to see you there.
Thank you. Ms. Cuthbert, was that a second?
Yes.
Great, board. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Haynes.
So I know that Ms. Cuthbert was your teacher and you graduated from New Smyrna Beach High, but I am so thankful that you're coming over to Highbanks Learning Center because it's an alternative site for those that don't know, but it's a site where we need some really strong leadership so that we can hopefully turn some of these students around that end up going there to spend some time and put them on the right track so that they can graduate too and be productive citizens. And I believe you're the right person to do that, and I look forward to coming to see you there. So thank you.
Great. Anyone else? All right, hearing none, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion passes. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Oh, good afternoon, Chairman Cologne, Vice Chairman Haynes, school board members, Ms. Cuthbert, Ms. Burnett, Mr. Persis, Interim Superintendent, Ms. Rachel Hazel, and the Volusia County School Community. I'm humbled to be named the principal of Highbanks Learning Center. As a resident of Volusia County for over 40 years, I am honored to be named as principal in the school district that I've lived in, attended school in, worked in, and served as an educator for the last 25 years. I am beyond blessed to continue working with students, families, and staff in Volusia County Schools. Before beginning my leadership journey, I served as a classroom teacher on the west side of Volusia County, working at Deltona Middle School, Heritage Middle School, Pine Ridge High School, DeLand High School, as a teacher in and out of the classroom. It was DeLand High School where I had a very personal conversation with the one Mr. Tom Russell, at the time assistant principal and future superintendent of Volusia County Schools. He stated that he had spoken to my father, who was also an assistant principal of Volusia County Schools, and had a very lengthy conversation in which they discussed my potential in the field of education. It was then and there I was given a career ultimatum. That ultimatum was follow your passion and continue to work with the students that need me the most all the time, or leave education and follow my other career path and choice outside of education. Thankfully, I chose education, and I chose education in Volusia County. Thinking about my future in education, I made the move back to New Smyrna Beach Middle School, where I attended, with my lifelong mentor and of mine by the name of Jim Tager, who was the principal of New Smyrna Beach High School at the, Middle School at the time. I started there as a classroom teacher and quickly became a school-based teacher on assignment, working discipline and all other duties assigned by the principal. After a few years, I was promoted to district-based teacher on assignment at University High School, yet again being able to work with a mentor that I had previously had by Dennis Neal. I was there only a couple of months when I received a phone call for my very first assistant principal job at Holly Hill K-8. I would like to say thank you to Ms. Julie Roseboom for showing me the ropes my first year, and Ms. Tammy Fisher, who yet again taught me how to better service the students in Volusia County Schools in my capacity as an exceptional student education assistant principal at Holly Hill K-8. Dr. Sparger, thank you for taking me in as a hawk and following and allowing me to spread my wings at Spruce Creek High School and every step of the way. It was a great time to be a hawk. Your encouragement and advice are some of the reasons I became a successful administrator. Mr. John E. Cash, you are not only my boss now, but a dear friend. I will always have a special place in my heart for you, sir. And to you, sir, I thank you for showing me the true passion for students, faculty, and staff. You have inspired me to be a better teacher, coach, leader, along every step of the way on my journey towards principalship, and helped me to understand the nuances that occur along that path. I would be very remiss if I did not thank my father, Michael John Strother, and my mother, Charlene Marie Strother, who have always supported me and encouraged me along my career. Not only could I never have done this without them, but I could not ask for two better people and parents to be in my corner and support me 100% of the time. It is because of each of you, Mom and Dad, that I am here today. Finally, I'd like to thank my girlfriend and life partner, Kate Frizzell, and my three children, Brody, Samantha, and Eva, for their unconditional support during my career advancements and all the time and effort I put into work, both on and off the clock. As I continue to hope to be a role model for my children, so they too may become successful and see the value in education and following their aspirations for a successful life. Now to my Creekside family. I am saddened to depart ways, but I am happy to have had the pleasure to work with each of you along the journey. The growth and development that we have made in the last several years is amazing, and I am confident that you will continue to shine and be the number one middle school in Volusia County. The High Banks Learning Center. I am so excited to join the team and become a member of the faculty and staff. I cannot wait to embrace the traditions of the school, its culture, and spirit as I meet all the fabulous teachers, staff, and students and families. It is my goal to support all stakeholders and continue the good work that has already begun and expand upon opportunities for those that may need High Banks Learning Center in their future. Again, thank you so much for this amazing opportunity, and I look forward to showing my passion and pride as we assist all the students and serve them at the next level.
Thank you. So will all the folks who were appointed please come up and we'll take pictures.
Congratulations.
Next.
Good Lord. Blocking her completely. We're hidden. Oh, no problem.
Thank you so much. Next up, 4.01, recognition of Deltona Middle Robotics Team, Charging Chaos.
Yes, for this, Mr. Cullen, I'd like to call up Ms. Amy Monahan, our specialist for STEM, and Ms. Jennifer Taylor, our coordinator for K-12 Science.
We're going to talk for just a minute to give you a little history, and then the important people in the back are going to speak.
You hold the mic just a little bit closer so we can hear you.
You're okay. Awesome.
Okay, good evening, Chairman Cologne, school board members, Interim Superintendent Hazel, and audience members. In 2011, the Race to the Top grant, I had the opportunity to hire our first STEM position in the science department. I was lucky enough to hire the amazing Amy Monahan, an environmental science teacher at DeLand High School. This grant and position enabled the science department to dream bigger than we had before. When I hired Amy, I only had one request. What was it? Can we do some more? I wanted robots. I wanted every kid to have at least one opportunity to have robots. And Amy said, challenge accepted, let's do it. So then the next question I asked her, how much experience have you had with robots? She goes, I'll figure it out. And that's exactly what she did. So today I'm happy to share that her can-do attitude and the awesome coaches across our district have supported 100% throughout our district with a robotics program. In addition, for the past 4 years, Volusia has qualified as a first robotics district under Amy's leadership. This year, they received an additional $50,000 grant through Disney, through the FIRST, to support growing Volusia County Schools robotics teams. And as a result, this year, Volusia facilitated 67 teams, pre-K through 12, which is the largest number of robotics teams in Volusia County history. Volusia hosted the regional championship, which provided the opportunity for teams in our region to qualify for state. And of the 36 teams that participated at regional championship, 8 Volusia teams moved on. Of those eight teams, Deltona Middle School, the Charging Chaos, qualified for state. At this time, I would like to personally thank Amy and the coaches that have made this possible for Volusia County School students. And at this time, Amy, would you please introduce the important folks we have behind us?
I would love to. But I do want to do a little shout out before we go there. The regional championship, we decided as a district, it's a long story, take it over. And in 2 weeks, we put it on. But if it wasn't for John Cash and Jay Strether, we would not have had a home to do that regional championship. I said, I need a place for in 2 weeks. And they were like, let's do it. So the can-do attitude is all over Volusia. So it's not, we're a team. It's not me. It's not one person. Although it is one person sitting next to me at the moment. So we could not succeed in our work without the dedication of remarkable teachers who are coaches for a myriad of programs that are supported like FIRST Robotics. And Miss Tanya Nalen, Mrs. Tanya Nalen, sitting next to me, is the STEM teacher at Deltona Middle School. Mm-hmm. And is the coach of not one, not two, not three, not four, five robotics teams at Deltona Middle School. She coaches not only that, she coaches two Cyber Patriot teams, my apologies. I know I'm not going to do it all. One made states, I've just been told. Science Olympiad, which we'll hear from her again tonight, and facilitates an amazing program that all her students participate in called the Amazing Shake. If you don't get a chance to go see that, you really need to, because this is a program where students compete in honing their soft skills and a wide array of real-world situations. So prepares them for real life. And once you hear them talk a few times, you'll be, wow, our future is bright. So it is my honor to present Mrs. Tanya Nalen of the Charging Chaos State Robotics Team and the team members Olivia Bibo, Alexander Williams, Braden Pyers, Elizabeth McDonald, Jackson, Nalon, and Reed Breakbill.
Thank you, everyone. I want to thank everybody for having the time and for thanking I want to thank everyone for having the time to recognize them. I would like to thank Ms. Monahan for everything that she has done for us. I would like to thank Ms. Feltner for giving me the free rein to kind of do what I do, and for Ms. Steers, who has supported us, Ms. Steers at Spruce Creek, for always being there to support our robotics and to lend a helping hand whenever she possibly could. And I'm going to turn it over to our robotics team.
Welcome.
Yeah. Guys, you'll make it work.
We would like to thank you guys for having us today. We are incredibly honored. And we would like to have a few minutes to explain our experiences while working with FIRST LEGO.
This year, we were fortunate enough to make it past qualifiers for the first time in our short four-year history. Woo-hoo. We were very excited and set our sights on Worlds. During our time at regionals, we unfortunately did not make it to Worlds, but we were fortunate enough to secure our first ever bid to the Florida State Championship in Niceville, Florida.
This year, being a part of LEGO Robotics has been a very enjoyable, interesting, and challenging experience. We have learned a lot about programming, engineering, social skills, teamwork, and critical thinking.
We all enjoyed the time we spent together, which brought us together as a team. We made a lot of jokes, spent a lot of time together, which was the main reason we all worked together, as well as a team. We are working on the robot to make working presentations. We laughed, enjoyed the overall, and had fun together.
As a part of FIRST, we are giving a problem every year to solve. This year's problem was to make a model, method, or piece of technology to improve the transportation of goods. And our solution to this problem was to make a system, a cross-country logistical system, with other teams. Our main part was automated trucks, and together we really enjoyed making our innovation project because it allowed us to be creative and it allowed us to reach out to a lot of people. States also allowed us to work with other teams. For example, we had to work with another team to build a really cool piece to represent all our team.
During the second day of state, during the first day of states, we had to complete team challenges to earn points. We also had to team up with other teams to build our Lego structures that represented both our teams. As a part of FIRST, we were given a problem we needed to solve this year. We needed to make a model, method, or piece of technology to improve the transportation of goods. We decided to create a motivated truck that worked with the automated maglevs and drones, which was a combines projects with two other Lego teams during one of our table games.
During the second day of states was our table run, and we had an error in scoring, so we had to go back and talk with them. But we got our correct score, and so yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, and congratulations. Any comments, or are we ready for a picture? Let's do a picture. Ms. Feltner, proud principal, Deltona Middle. All right, next item up on the agenda is recognition of the Science Olympiad Regional and State Award winners. Superintendent Hayes?
Yes, for this we're going to have Ms. Jennifer Taylor, a coordinator of K-12 Science, and Ms. Kelly McClarty, our District Science Olympiad Liaison.
Good evening again. Tonight I have the pleasure of kicking off the recognitions for the hard work and achievements of our Volusia County Science Olympiad teams who qualified to participate at state this year after an intense regional competition at Emory-Riddle University. Science Olympiad, as you know, is an international competition where students prepare all year long for one of 23 events. It's very similar to a competitive sport. There are 23 different events they can choose from. Some of them they build things ahead of time. Some of them they just major in some type of knowledge topic that they then come to compete in. Many of our schools have multiple teams, And the students you will see and hear from tonight are a representation of lots and lots of hard work. Parents, students, teachers, principals, coaches. This year we had 11 Volusia County schools in middle and high school participate in the Science Olympiad Regional Competition. And of those schools, we had 9 schools that earned medals in various events. Those included Deltona Middle School, Galaxy Middle School, Silver Sands Middle School, New Smyrna Beach Middle School, DeLand High, Spruce Creek High, Deltona High, University, and Mainland. Our programs also expanded this year as we welcomed to the Science Olympiad family River Springs Middle School and New Smyrna Beach Middle School. We are pleased to celebrate with 5 Volusia County schools who qualified and participated in those state Olympiad competition. We're so very proud of each and every one of these teams for their hard work and commitment. Each school won different categories, different events. So the way that Science Olympiad works is you can actually medal in the individual events, not just the overall. At this time, I would like to say a special thank you to Kelly McClarty for her leadership as the district liaison for Science Olympiad. This is a passion that she has brought with her from Galaxy Middle School, where she was a coach. And that passion has continued to grow our program across the district. So thank you for that. Thank you for your leadership. At this time, Kelly gets the fun and the pleasure of introducing our wonderful students and our coaches, which would like to share with you something that they love about Science Olympiad. Kelly.
So before we jump in, I do want to just say thank you to Mr. Cologne for coming out the day of the regional competition. He was out there cheering with the parents and the coaches, taking all of the pictures right alongside them. So we really, really do appreciate your support and being there that day. I cannot wait for you to hear from our athletes and their coaches, so we're going to jump right into that. We're going to go alphabetically, and we're going to start with middle school. So we're going to start with Deltona Middle School, so you're going to get to see Tanya Nalon again. So Tanya, one of the things that's really cool about her is she is just such a go-getter. And so she has built her Olympiad program over the past 2 years, and she is competing and meddling with her students against some of the best teams in the state. Other teams are going, where did she come from? So it's pretty cool to see her program grow and her kids excel, and you're going to love hearing from them. So, Tanya, can you bring your kiddos down? Hey.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for letting us be here. It's like an actual honor. My name is Ethan.
And my name is Peyton Phillips.
And we're representing both the teams, Nerd Herd, which is me, and
Accidentally on Purpose from Deltona Middle School. Yeah.
So we are here to present to you our experience, our personal experience with Science Olympiad. And you guys already know what it really is, but we're here to represent both these teams and what we did.
In Science Olympiad, there are many different opportunities and tasks that range from build missions, such as Mission Possible and Bridges, to tests like Sounds and Music, as well as Anatomy and Physiology, or labs like Bioprocess Labs. Some of the events are combinations of them, which is a mix between both or more, two or more formats.
So we actually took like a lot away from this. I've been personally doing this in sixth grade. You know, that's when we started, and I'm surprised of how well we did compared to, like, all these teams that I've been doing it for, like, 20 years. So I first joined it because I like science, and Science Olympiad has the word science in it, so, like, that's enough. So I decided to join, and I kind of went into it blindly, but I'm really glad that I did join since I learned so much, like, so many different science topics. But not only that, I learned something even more important, which is, you know, cooperation, working as a team, and so many other different things.
Each event, you get to work with a partner who also chose the event from the same team, of course. Some events, you can have up to 3 people. None of them are only solo, though you do have the option to do so, but it is always better with a team. As previously stated, we have the Amazing Shake competition at our school. It's a competition where you present yourself in the real world, such as job interviews, doctor's appointments, eating etiquette, and these are all things that we had to do for the Amazing Shake plus more. There are several rounds that narrow down the competition until the top 5, which is the debate.
And the interesting thing is, 4 out of the 5 people who made the top 5, I'm actually one of them, 4 out of the 5 were in Science Olympiad. which is interesting because me personally, Science Olympia definitely helped with Amazing Shake, and I would not be in the top five if it weren't for the Science Olympia. So, yeah, that's pretty interesting. And also, before we close this out, I would also like to thank Miss Nalon. She's been great. Yeah, she's cool.
We'll keep her.
But, yeah, I couldn't have made it where we were in States without her. So, yeah, thank you to her. Can we actually give it up for her?
Yeah. For Miss Nalon, ladies and gentlemen.
Overall, I hope our future generation gets the same opportunity we did and also took away the same things that we did and has as cool of a teacher as Ms. Allen. Like, yeah. But thank you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Good
job. I would like to add one thing, if I could. Ms. McClarity was absolutely amazing, and I would like to thank her. And also Mr. Innes and the folks over at Galaxy were a great help to me being a new coach. The fact that I had no idea what I was doing. And Science Olympiad is a beast to teach. So having no clue, the amazing people at Galaxy were so beneficial and always willing to lend a helping hand. So I am extremely grateful to them. So. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just to add on to what she said about those fantastic people over at Galaxy, one of their things is we want to compete against the best. So we're going to help anybody who wants to get there to get to where they need to be and give them the resources they need. And having said that, our next school is Galaxy Middle School. Brian Innes and Team Galaxy are the largest Olympiad program we have in Volusia County. Their program actually encompasses over 60 kids every single year. And if you walk into the Olympiad room over at Galaxy, it's such a special place because you can't tell who are the parents and who are the teachers because they work that closely together. It's truly a teacher-parent partnership. And like the kids were saying about the Amazing Shake and leadership, Olympiad does so much of that for the kids. So, Brian, when you come up, I would love it if you would share your team names and why those are the team names. So if Brian and his principal and his kiddos would come up.
Hello. Thank you for letting us be here again.
Welcome.
One thing I've not done in the past is talk about the different adults that I work with, but I'm very glad that Kelly brought them up. While the ladies are setting up their instrument, I think they're going to play a tune for you. Here are some people that I really want to thank. There's a lot of adults that make this happen. First of all, Dr. William McCunis works at Embry-Riddle, and he's one of the people who set this up. He worked closely with a guy that you guys all might know named Jim Clements, formerly of Atlantic High School. The two of them were the co-leaders of the Embry-Riddle event that Mr. Colon showed up and rah-rahed us through. It was really awesome. Also, there's a lady by the name of Valerie Ledford, who many of you will never know. She worked with a lot of people at the University of Florida setting up our state competition. Here, as mentioned, we very much appreciate the support of the people here at our county. Between Amy Monahan and Jeremy Blinn, and, of course, Kelly McClarty and Jennifer Taylor. The guy who got us started, I don't know if he's still here, but I haven't seen him in a while, but Mike Cimino is the one who got us into Science Olympiad. I say we. Jeff Krobe is like my partner in crime that we started this 13 years ago, and we started something that is just, it's blossomed. Sitting in the audience behind me, we've already mentioned Tanya Nalen, but there's the two Tates. There's Wendy and Dean back there, and there's Nick Stout, Doc. These are other coaches that are going to be recognized today that you'll meet shortly. It's like a big family. Now, specifically from my school, the janitors get involved. They wear the shirts. They root us on. I have my bookkeeper, Ms. Turciana. I have Deb Combs. I have the administrators, our principal, Efren, Alejandro, Mr. Tony Gooden, Dr. Sherry Pugh, Ms. Stenberger LaRussa, and then we get down into the nitty-gritty. These all people I'm about to mention are all coaches who donate at least an hour a week from August through March, okay? So in any other organization, they'd get so much accolades. But our teachers, we have Diana Ronowitz, Sally Brickler, William Cobb, James Erath, Carla Felder, Kim Fowler, Sydney Gragg, and Amanda Whited. These are teachers. Now we have parents, some sitting in the audience here. Christina Avalo, Brian Barber, Jamie Dubach, April Jocks, Catherine Peavy, and Mike Spencer. Some of these are teachers, by the way, but luckily their kids are with us. And then we have some people, like there's a man named Lee Benjamin and a guy named Alejandro Amana. They heard about our program, have no kids in the game, aren't teachers at our school, but they donate hours a week coming in and visiting us, so it's a great outreach. In addition, we got some kids in the audience here that used to be with us. These are high school students. Emma Krobe, Mason Ortiz, Daniel Radu, Trinity Bellflower, Jordan Dasher, Zach Ledger, and Navia Sharma. These are high school kids that come help the kids do research and prepare and work. And in addition to all this, we have awesome parents who provide food and support. And then we have the reason we do this, and that's these guys. So I'm going to now hand it over to them. I hope they're ready. And I really don't know what they're going to do, but I'm sure it'll be awesome. This is Danya Duperon, and this is Lily Downs, two of our awesome sixth graders. They were like, we want to go in there as the newbies and tell them what it's like. And I was like, I'm not going to stop you. So anyway, here you go.
Hello, my name is Daya Duperon, and I'm in sixth grade.
Hi, my name is Lily Downs, and I'm in sixth grade. We are honored to be here, and I'd like to thank you for letting us have this opportunity to share how great our Science Olympiad is.
The categories I am in are Pink Ball Parachute, Storm the Castle, Crime Busters, Food Science, and Rhodes Scholar. I won second place for ping pong and first place for storm at regionals. Also, I won fifth place in ping pong parachute at states. Overall, all three of our teams won first, second, and third at states, at regionals.
I'm in Sounds of Music. Sounds of Music, Crime Busters, Bridges, Storm the Castle, Ride to Do It, and Solar System. I won first place in Storm the Castle at regionals. At states, we beat the eighth graders and the seventh graders, coming out of place of ninth in Crime Busters. In elementary school, I had always dreamed of being a musician or an aeronautical engineer. My brother was in Science Olympiad, so once I saw him compete, I knew I wanted to do the same thing. I wanted to pass my brother and get more medals than him. I learned better teamwork skills, and best of all, I had fun while learning cooperation and teamwork at the same time.
My brother was here last year, and I love to take over the legacy. I wanted to be in Science Olympiad because first I wanted to beat my brother. And I think Science Olympiad can engage your brain in science. We are one big family that is kind to everyone. We work together to solve problems and questions in science. And thanks to my brother, I was able to win medals. Also, he taught me what teamwork really is and to be the best person I can. My brother, Jeremy, ended up winning first place in all five of his categories at regionals and won sixth place for electric rider stuff at states. Science Olympiad helps us get better grades and helps me to become a more social person overall.
An xylophone that me and my partner Emily Cairns made. So we built it out of metal pipes, felt, super glue, a head of a nail, epoxy, and a wooden stick. This is on a C scale. It had 8 notes plus one more. We had to grind down the pipes to make the right notes. So we drilled a hole into one of the ends. So that way we could string spider wire through it and hit it, so that way the tuner could pick up what note it was.
This is a rocket we use for a ping pong parachute, and this is one of the parachutes that we brought to regionals. My partner, Gwyneth Davies, and I made this parachute by using trash bags, strings, ping pong ball, and duct tape. And for the rocket, we used duct tape, 2 drinking bottles, 1 16-ounce and the other is a 20-ounce. Also, we used a clear plastic tube. To launch the rocket, we used an air compressor. We hooked the rocket to the air compressor. Then we put the parachute on top of the rocket, and we just back away and say 3, 2, 1, launch. We usually use a PSI of 50. The time starts when the parachute goes in the air, and the time stops when the rocket touches, when the ping pong ball touches the ground.
I'd like to take a moment to play on my xylophone an excerpt from Yankee Doodle Dandy.
That was awesome, and thank you. And I don't know if you guys caught this, but when we were at the Olympiad competition, when they did the overall, it was Galaxy first place, Galaxy second place, Galaxy third place. And so congratulations to our team at Galaxy and also Mr. Alejandro back there. I see you. We'll come up for pictures in just a minute.
Oh, by the way, I wanted to answer Kelly McCarty's question. She's like, what are our team names? We've had many awesome students in the past, and our teams are named after students who displayed characteristics we're trying to match. There was a young man by the name of Kunle Gabadamose, and he was our most dedicated. The kid never, ever wasted a moment of time, and he is our first team is named after him, the Kunles. Our second team was a young man named Dietrich Guzman, who started out as a sixth grader as the most off-the-wall ADHD kid who couldn't focus on anything, and he ended up growing into our strongest leader we've ever had. And so our second team is named the Dietrichs because the growth that you can make. And our third team was a young man by the name of James White. We call him Team James, who won more medals than anybody in the history of Galaxy. So we have a few kids right now working, maybe these two, who wish to rename that team after themselves. So anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you, and congratulations.
Our next school is Silver Sands Middle School, and that's Wendy Tate. And Wendy has been doing Olympiad for a while, and they're always very consistent at Silver Sands. They're always there. They're always a big part of the competition. And so, Wendy, if you could come down. And they brought some cool stuff.
Welcome.
I'm just going to talk for a second, and Galaxy was first, second, and third, but Silver Sands was fourth.
All right.
Which to me means second. But these are two of my, this is William, and I forgot to bring his build, but he can tell you about it. And this is Giselle, and I have been doing it for a while. This morning, I saw two of my former Olympiad kids in Chick-fil-A. My daughter wanted Chick-fil-A this morning. And they're on my middle school team, and they're seniors now. And one of them has a brother that's in college. And so, yeah, I have been doing it a while, and I love it. I really do. But I'm going to let these guys talk to you.
So in regionals, I didn't get to go to regionals because I was busy that day, but I saw the photos and I could tell they had a lot of fun. I built this trebuchet for state. When I started at state, I did not know what trebuchet meant. Then I learned it was a French catapult that was the energy that launched it came from away. And I would have brought the projectile to shoot it, but I don't think security would have let me shoot it. I also did Green Generation and Ornithology for state as well. I have Ornithology in this binder, and there's a bunch of songs and photos in the. And William, he did Solar System and came in 13th for Solar System. Why don't you?
Yeah, we didn't exactly do the greatest in Solar System, but we did also make an airplane like for the Electric Light Project, which we got third place in.
Awesome.
Which is pretty surprising considering it crashed into a wall halfway through that. We also built a mousetrap car where the engine was it was just a mousetrap. It pulled forward and we tried to get it as accurate as possible. I believe we got around like second or third in that too. That was built by Ben, who is not here at the moment. And before we went to state, I also had done the ornithology, and yes, we had like an entire field guide with us. It's not an easy thing to do.
It'll work.
Ornithology is the study of birds. It's a very large subject.
Thank you for that explanation.
Honestly,
by the end of ornithology, I never wanted to hear another bird call in my life. It was and Miss Tate, I want to thank her because without her, I don't know what we do because she, I don't know how she even organizes this for how long she's been doing it. I just want to thank her for that.
Thank you for giving us this opportunity.
Thank you, and please hang out for pictures in just a few minutes.
Can she show you?
Oh, absolutely. We're going to see something fly?
I didn't bring your projectiles, and I don't want to hit anyone. Cause,
have that.
Basically, here are the weights. They would drop the projectile. I have... And I spent about 3 to 4 hours building this with just nails we had, and then we would try to test it. And we looked at the rules, we had to do a few, like, changes. But honestly, I think it went pretty well. These would sustain the arm that I, right here, this, and this would launch the projectile. So we use what would carry the projectile. It would... When I pulled the trigger, the projectile that was in this mask would go flying, and basically it'd just go flying about a few feet. And when we did the test for state, it hit the bucket once, missed it by a foot, and then we tried again, and it did pretty well in my thoughts for a first time.
Hey. Awesome. Congratulations.
What a clever use for a mask.
Nice going. So that does it for our middle schools. We have two high schools. So Dean Tate is the coach for DeLand High, and he has a reputation in Volusia for just always being there for his students, and Olympiad is just one gigantic example of that. So I'm going to let him come down with his students and tell you a little bit about their journey.
Us three chairs. We'll use all three.
Fine.
Hi,
welcome,
Dean Tate. Thanks for having us. I've been doing this. I think this is my sixth year, it's been a wonderful journey. My two co-presidents this year have been participating on the team for 3 years, and they participated at Heritage Middle freshman year. I think you guys actually rode the bus with me to state. So I gave them a ride to their first state state competition when they were ninth grade, and they've been with us for the 3 years. And Wendy Zhang and Austria Merritt. Wendy is going to MIT next year,
wow.
And Austria is going to Princeton.
Wow. So.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Wendy Zhang. I'm a co-president of Science Olympia.
And my name is Austria Merritt. And I remember being in middle school with Wendy and being on the team there and growing throughout the process into high school and getting to experience the different levels that Science Olympiad has and all of the events. And as a senior now, I can see the value that Science Olympiad has had as a club and how much I've learned. It's introduced me to all kinds of areas in STEM and future career options and interests that we could follow. And it's been a great opportunity to meet people with like interests.
One specific event that I participated in this year was Wi-Fi Lab. And I really liked it because it allowed me to like further explore like the real life implication of a class I had like at school, like physics. And yeah, like overall, Science Olympia has been like a really fun journey because I just got to like collaborate with a lot of like high schoolers and like work with them and like do fun events and stuff.
For me, an event that I've stuck with throughout every year in Science Olympiad was anatomy and physiology. And it was a really interesting event to take on because I hadn't had any classes in it. And just throughout the years, I could see how much I had grown and been able to learn and self-study and working with a partner in the event. And it's a really valuable opportunity to have. And
one of the things that I'm always very happy to see is that when the president is typically one of our seniors and they step up in leadership, and these two young ladies are no different. The amount of help and assistance they gave to the entire team, coordinating everything, was just amazing. And I also want to say thank you to everybody at the county. Brian, I mean, you could tell Brian, he's just incredible, you know. Thank you for coming out. It was fun seeing you out at the regionals. You know, if we ask anybody, any of the coaches for assistance, we always want to help. And Dr. Carr, my principal, she supports us, and it's just a wonderful experience, and I think the kids get a lot out of it.
Thank you so much. And we'll get a picture shortly after.
Our last team is Spruce Creek High, and it's led by Dr. Stoot. So if you want to come up with your student.
I'm Dr. Stute. It's been a fun year. Regionals was in person, and we had a fun time. The States was remote, and while it was fun, we were looking forward to next year being in person. We were able to get second place in States in ornithology and sixth in green generations. Our current presidents weren't able to be here. Eric, I believe, is looking at colleges, and Salma is at a meeting for a scholarship. Dr. Sparger asked me where Salma's going this year. And he said, Brown, and I said, I don't know. I'm certain it's somewhere prestigious, so, which has been true with, like, almost all of our students. The IB program, as weird as that sounds, we have that over at Spruce Creek High. It's almost like a feeder program for the Science Olympiad there. We get really fantastic students, and it makes it a really enjoyable time. But it also means that we have, like, a continuation there. So one of our upcoming presidents, Ginny Liu, is the sister of last year's president, Merrill Liu, and the other, Ahmed Alib, is the brother of the current sitting president, Salman Alib. The other president's Eric Chin. And he's number 3 of 4. There's going to be one more in the future coming in over to Spruce Creek High. But the current presidents want to talk a little bit about their feelings and plans for next year. Please do.
So hi, I'm Jenny Liu, and this is Ahmed Aldeeb.
Hi, my name is Ahmed Aldeeb, and we're both currently IB sophomores attending Spruce Creek High School, and we are the upcoming co-presidents for Science Olympiad next year.
Okay. So I've been in Science Olympiad for about 2 years now, and I've competed in Dynamic Planet, Experimental Design, and Write It, Do It this year. And last year, you know, the competition was virtual, so I didn't get to get the full experience of Science Olympiad. But after this year, I feel like I can say that Science Olympiad is all about collaboration. And I really enjoy the events. I enjoy the time in between the events, as weird as that sounds. I enjoy the award ceremony, not just by myself, but with my fellow partners. And I've mostly participated in test events, so I never experienced build events. But even sitting down to take a test with your partner is just so, as weird as it sounds, it's fun. But it's a collaborative experience, and it's a partnership. It's enriching, and it's about STEM. So for me, the teamwork aspect of Science Olympiad is super, super big. Yeah.
So what I participated this year, I participated in Green Generation, which is like an environmental event. I also participated in Bridges, where we constructed a bridge, as well as Write Stuff, where we constructed a plane. And I also competed in remote sensing, and basically my position this year was Builds event director. We tried to encourage more people in the club to do do and complete builds. And something a lot of high schoolers and I enjoy about Science Olympiad is that we get to collaborate on the test, as well as we get to build structures that we would not do in like our regular classes. So it's super fun. We get to explore different areas of sciences, including life sciences, animal sciences, anatomy. It just, the list keeps going on. And we competed in states this year. We got top 20. It's not as good as we thought we would be, but we're excited for next year, and we've adapted, and we're ready to see what our future holds. I'd like to say a huge thank you to Dr. Sparger as well as Dr. Stute for allowing us, for giving the support that we need for Science Olympiad, as well as always being there when we need that, when we need them. And we'd want to say thank you, and it's an honor for allowing us to be here today.
All right, so we will march right up here, and we will take pictures.
Everybody in the audience.
My
lines, come on.
Jackson.
We're missing one.
Yep, Jackson's coming. Okay.
Thank you.
Board, we've got two cards for public comment. Do you guys want to go ahead and do those, or would you like to take a break first?
Those and then take a break.
We can do those and take a break. Sounds good. All right. So as you all are aware, there are 3 minutes to speak to the board. And first up, we have Michelle McCoy. Welcome. You'll have 3 minutes. There's a timer there to remind you of your time. Thank you.
Is that good?
Yeah.
All right. Greetings, everyone. I am so proud to be here to talk about the Battle of the Books for middle school. First, we appreciate all of you who were able to come by and see us and support our kids. It was an awesome day. Regardless of what school you're at, middle school is a tough time to be a reader. Everything is about appearances and being cool, and the fact that we had 13 teams that competed is incredible. We are all, every single one of us that was a coach, are so proud of each and every team and player. It's also a tough time to be a librarian some days, with many of us responsible for running the media center and handling all the one-to-one devices and all the problems that come with them. And we are also extra grateful for our teacher friends who hopped in there to be coaches for some of our teams as well. This was definitely a village that we needed to make this happen. Personally, I started out with a team of five, but I had one who fell off the team, decided he didn't want to get out there in public, and I had another one who was, my team captain was absent the day of the event. Oh my. And yeah, so we just took my other eighth grader, you're the team captain, and off we go as a team of three. Sure did. The kids were so worried about being a small team because most teams did have four or five people on them, but they collaborated like pros and they worked so hard together. People from all over the county congratulated them and complimented them, and they were literally glowing with pride. Another library media specialist said, and I'm going to quote her because I couldn't possibly have written this, "This was a magical and impactful, life-changing day for my kids. My team consisted of a kid who eats some lunch in the library due to behavior in the cafeteria, and one who reads because he's grounded for life," his words, "and another who is shy with a difficult home life, and one who tries to skip class by being in the library. But that day, the day of the event, they were important, smart, special part of a team. They worked together and encouraged each other and saw themselves in a different light. Each one had a personal victory, regardless of the number of points they earned. What a powerful outcome. This event was a collaboration between media services and the ELA department, the district's financial support, and their willingness to let so many secretaries and TOAs and specialists and everybody at the district level come out and volunteer for our event. Everybody was just absolutely integral to this being a success. We also thank all of our principals who let us do this. It was just a wonderful, wonderful day. Each team got different colored t-shirts with matching 2022 Battle of the Books logos on them, which were provided free for kids and coaches, thanks to VAME, our local media association, McGraw-Hill, and our library vendors, Mackin and Children Plus. Addition Financial also helped support our
event. Thank you, Ms. McCoy.
Okay. And I just had a little thank you at the end, but let me make sure I didn't miss anybody. If I miss a vendor, they might get mad.
So we are going to bring you all back, and I'm curious to see who won. So we're going to bring you back to Battle of the Books if the board would agree, because I want to see who those kids were who won, and I don't know who won. So I'll be. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. We'll honor them here. Thank you so much for coming. Next up is Carol Sawyer.
lot of numbers on there, and I'm going to speak fast, so I thought you'd have a nice visual. Like Stephanie Workman, I love numbers too.
Welcome, Ms. Sawyer. You can go ahead and start.
Oh.
We'll give you 8 seconds back. Go ahead.
Okay.
Shoot.
Okay. Good evening, Ms. Hazel, Chairman Colon, and board members. Tonight I would like to explain the structure of student transportation and why we have vacancies when other departments say we do not have vacancies. We have 233 bus operator position codes, but only have 177 bus operators. We have 56 open bus operator positions, but you wouldn't know that by looking at our website under job vacancies. I will use bus operators as an example, but you can apply the same concept to the bus attendants. In order for STS to run efficiently, the following example describes the structure we have used for decades. You cannot equate the number of bus operators with the number of bus routes. There are many variables that come into play within the structure of STS, as you will see in the chart. These numbers are from April 13. Keep in mind, things change all the time. We have an east side and a west side. We have one bus operator dispatch on each side, one bus operator safety and security on each side. Those four bus operators. Dispatch bus operator could never drive because the buses could not leave the yard without a bus operator manning the radio. The safety security bus operator should never drive either because they're supposed to go out when an accident involves a bus or an incident occurs on a bus, which is quite frequent. However, these bus operators are driving every day. Next, on each side, we have three areas, 3, 1, 2, 3 on the east, 4, 5, 6 on the west. Each one of them is run by one bus operator that we call a lead driver trainer. They shouldn't be driving either, except in an emergency, because they have to make sure that each route is covered every morning and every afternoon, along with inputting bus referrals and a host of other administrative jobs. However, these bus operators are driving every day also. Next, we have three area unassigned drivers in each area. That's 18 bus operators. These bus operators are not assigned to a route, but they are assigned to drive every day. And what they cover are daily callouts. We average about 15 bus operators calling out every day. We also have bus operators on workman's comp, family medical leave, or other kind of leave. Bus operators are stood down for some reason. Next, the current number of bus operators that you will see in each area is what we have left. In Area 1, for example, there's 29 routes and only 25 bus operators. We need 4 more bus operators in there. And you can go all the way across to Area 6, 32 routes, and we have 29 bus operators. We need 3 more bus operators there to cover all the routes. So if you add all that across, you will see for STS to run efficiently, we need 21 more bus operators in order to cover every bus route without many of us covering 2 or 3 bus routes on any given day. These shortages causes us to eat up bus runs, put more kids on the buses, which causes more behavior. It also it changes the buses, and there's a disruption with the parents, the students, and the schools. So I wanted to explain why they say we don't have any bus openings, but we do have plenty of bus openings.
Thank you, Ms. Sawyer.
Thank you.
All right, that concludes public comment. We will take a 10-minute break and return at 4. Board members, before we proceed, I wanted to share some good news with you all. We had item 8.04, and gentlemen, if you guys don't mind 1 second, we had item 8.04, which was the textbook adoption for math, and so we pulled that off of the agenda this evening, and so that will come back to us the next meeting. However, while we were here, we received great news, and so Ms. Chris Smith, if you want to just come up real quick, and again, we are going to vote on this at the next meeting, but I just thought it'd be great that we, so that she can go home.
Yay. Hello. Yes. And immediately when the state list did come out, those courses that did not make the state list, our publishers immediately started doing the appeal process. The random upper courses that they still have not gotten feedback from the state on, because they knew that elementary was the priority. Because elementary, we need to get those ordered for elementary. So we have the wonderful news, I just received it from our math director, Tammy Deary, that Big Ideas is the only second K-5 publisher on there now. It joined the other company. So we are on, for K-5, we are on that state list now, along with many other courses that we have. That was the big concern of ours. So we look forward to bringing that quote to you to approve at the next school board meeting.
Great. Thank you for that great news.
Hey.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Board, if it's okay with you, we'll skip down to the legislative update, seeing as these gentlemen are ready to go. Does anybody have any objection to that?
Nope.
Very good. So we're going to go down to 18.01, legislative update.
And for this update, we'll turn it over to Mr. Kevin Penley, our general counsel, who is joined by representatives from Gray Robinson.
Thank you, Ms. Hazel. Mr. Chair, board members, tonight we have for you the legislative update. And I have the auspicious occasion to introduce my colleagues from Gray Robinson. To my left, Rob Stewart, and to Rob's left, Chris Carmody, who most of you know and have met. These gentlemen have been working on our behalf since we entered the new contract for lobbying services with them, and they have an update for you for this year's legislative session that they would like to present at this time.
Welcome.
Good evening. Thank you for having us again. Chris Carmody, Robert Stewart. We have some slides, a slide deck, and we'll run through those quickly. Obviously, if something comes up, feel free to ask, or we can save it to the end, whatever's easiest for you. I will say at the front end, this is an attempt to capture a lot of what happened in the session and then go drill down into issues related to K-12, but by no means does it cover everything. So, you know, if at the end we can cover some, ask question, by all means we can jump into it. But we'll go ahead right here. That's us. I can assure you I'm as tall as Robert if you look at that photo. When we look at any session, you kind of have to look at the leaders to understand the personalities in the room. And so we'll start with the governor's office. And we've been asking around to some of the more senior lobbyists has there ever been a governor that's had as much influence and power and sort of reach over the entire process as Governor DeSantis? And the answer keeps coming back, no. He is that influential in this process. He's got a great team working with him, and that sort of sets the tone for the entire session. And you're seeing some of that in the special sessions that are following. But we'll start there. You have the governor. That's his chief of staff, James Othmeyer, who was his former general counsel. Stephanie Kapalousis, who is formerly Florida DOT secretary, was County Chair, for executive side. And then Chris Spencer is our former teammate from Gray Robinson. We lent him to Governor DeSantis' transition team. We're still waiting for him to come back, but the good news is he still answers our calls. That's who's leading the effort. Of course, you know these cabinet members. They're no stranger to anyone. That's Nikki Fried on the left, Commissioner of Agriculture, who's currently running for governor, Ashley Moody, our Attorney General, who's running for re-election, and Jimmy Patronis, our CFO, also running for re-election. When you look into the House and Senate, you see top left there, Chris Sprouse, who's the Speaker. He's terming out in November, and this is his leadership team. That bottom left there, that's an important person to know as we go into these special sessions, and I know you're familiar with Mr. Renner, Representative Renner, that is, but he'll be the Speaker in the next 2 years after the November elections, assuming the Republicans maintain control in the House. So those are the leaders there. Speaker Sprouse's background is an attorney. He was a prosecutor. So you can see a lot of law enforcement and criminal issues are sort of important to him, but as well in his various backgrounds, he's taken to higher education and other areas. And then in the Senate, you have Wilton Simpson, the Senate president, who's also an ag commissioner candidate. The governor just endorsed him yesterday. And then here's the rest of his leadership team there in that bottom left. And he's a farmer by trade. He's had several businesses, but an egg farmer is what he's most known for across the state. And then bottom left, Kathleen Pasadoma, who's the rules chair, and she's the incoming Senate president. She's an attorney out of Naples, Florida, was served in the House previously before she moved to the Senate, and she would, in theory, ascend to the presidency after November. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Robert to talk a little bit about some of the session stats.
Sure, and good evening, everybody. Robert Stewart again. Great to be with you. Really appreciate the opportunity to not only share what happened in the last legislative session that just ended, but really more than anything, just for the privilege of being part of your team. It really has been fun in these first few months. And so the next slide that you see in front of you really kind of tells a broad picture of how much goes on in a 60-day session. So 3,600 more than 3,600 total bills filed. If you back out of that total the House appropriation bills, which under the House rules to file for an appropriation, you have to actually file a bill. If you back those out, you're still at 2,000 plus or minus pieces of legislation that get filed every single year. And of that, this year only 285 of those passed. At the most recent count, I think this is as of yesterday, the governor has approved 70 bills. There's one still pending his action, although he may have signed that yesterday. And then the one bill that he vetoed was the congressional maps. And we'll talk a little bit about redistricting, but that's been the only bill that he has vetoed so far. The next slide will show you on any given session, there is one constitutionally required thing that the legislature has to do, and that's pass a balanced budget. The second thing every 10 years they have to do is redraw the districts following the census. And so you're doing that, if you haven't already, with your districts here and the county and all of that. So the House and the Senate maps that the House and the Senate each drew were already approved by the Supreme Court. They were hardly challenged. They were very quickly approved under the Fair Districts Amendments that are in our Constitution. And so the maps for the House and Senate, as you see them in the slides that are about to come, really are the law of the land. The congressional maps are the ones that the governor threatened to veto. He followed through on that threat, and that triggered the special session that we just had last week. And those maps are, again, already under challenge, but are likely to carry between now and at least the election. Here's your House maps. Not a lot of changes, at least in terms of the number of members that you gather for your delegation. The one that I'll point out to you is District 30. That's a new open seat, and it is now a North Brevard South Volusia seat, and that's just kind of a new seat, but I think you kept the same number of members in your delegation. On the Senate side, you've got Senator Wright representing the vast majority of the district with a little bit on the north end belonging to Senator Hudson, who has a northern seat that grabs the top end of Volusia County. On the congressional side, these are the maps that were just adopted by the governor that I mentioned were under challenge right now, but we do expect, at least as we sit here today, and anything could change tomorrow, but we expect today that these will be the seats that you run on. You have Congressional District 7 on the southern end of your county. That is now an open seat. That's the seat that was previously held mostly by Stephanie Murphy. And she's not running for re-election, so that seat's open. And then District 6, you see there is Michael Waltz, who is part of your delegation today, I believe.
So as Robert said, they are required every year to pass a budget. This is that anomaly 10th year when they do redistricting. So let's talk about the budget. As you know, you've been following. It hasn't been sent to the governor, so that we'll have more to discuss on this later. But the legislature approved a $112.1 billion budget with $8.9 billion in reserves and $43.7 out of general revenue, i.e. top-line revenue or sales tax, property tax. Interestingly enough, before we get into the details, just 5 years ago, the budget was $82 billion. So you can do some quick math on that. That's grown 30. And 10 years ago, it was 70. So in 10 years, this budget has nearly doubled. Now, there's a lot of federal funds that are being used in this budget, about $5 billion from the relief packages from COVID that Congress passed a couple years ago. We had $5 billion left over. But most of this is top-line revenue. And some of that you can blame on inflation. Some of that you can blame on other things. But it's a good problem to have. We have revenue here. But there is a lot of money that the legislature had to spend. Interestingly enough, very little in recurring dollars that they put into use, some, and we can get into some of those, but mostly it was non-recurring because they recognize that whether it's inflation or something else, a bill will come due and we will have a dip in the economy at some point that will drop this budget. But if you can see quickly, Health and Human Services, $48.9 billion. education, that includes K-12 and higher ed, 25.7, that includes the base teacher raises, which we'll talk about later, $6.9 billion for criminal justice, $6.5 for transportation economic development, about $11 billion, that is the road fund that DOT has, and then $9.3 billion for ag and natural resources. This is an important one in that 4 years ago, the governor said he wanted more water funding, water quality funding, mostly focused in South Florida, the Lake Okeechobee area, but he said he wanted $2 billion, and with this budget and the $600-plus million that was towards that, they're going to well eclipse that $2 billion over 4 years. And then finally, $1 billion inflation fund. It was originally acronymed BIDEN. I assume everyone can read or can translate that, which the House had a little fun with that. But really, it was about that we are facing inflation in our state, across the country as well. And what they're trying to do is deal with the fact that DMS, the main procurement arm of the state, is going to be having a lot of contracts that by no fault of anyone, the cost of goods are going to go up. And so this is now a $1 billion fund that will allow these agencies and departments and divisions to tap into that fund through approval to get an increase on some of those procurements or those goods that they're trying to procure. Here's a pie chart. If you like pie charts, you can get a better idea of what that looks like. The big bright red is Health and Human Services, and the next in line is Education. You know, and I kind of hinted at it, but we'll touch about it, that a lot of this is because of the increased revenue. And if you look at just January alone, they were 200, that's that final bullet there, they're 200 million over the projections. And I think just this last go around for February, it was something like 300 million over projections. So the state is doing well when it comes to that. And that's a sign of why they're having an increased budget. Now, this is all, of course, before the governor vetoes anything, line item vetoes, so all that is subject to change. But affordable housing, we know Volusia County is no stranger to this issue, as is the other 66, quite frankly, counties in the state. They kept good on their promise from previous session that they would fully fund Sadowski after they reallocated how that would. And if you recall, they decided to take, let's just say, the pie. They were going to do half of the pie towards affordable housing and the other half split, you know, fourth and fourth towards resiliency funding and water quality. They honored that this year and what was in. The interesting is they put Hometown Heroes in there, which is basically $100 million dedicated for down payment assistance for first-time home buyers, police, firefighters, 911 operators, teachers, paramedics, healthcare workers, and home health aides. Robert and I tried really hard to get lobbyists in the Hometown Heroes program, but no one was buying. So we'll talk through. They always pass a tax package, so we thought we'd give you a quick back-to-school sales tax holiday. They have to re-up that every year, but they're, of course, going to continue to re-up that. Begins July 25th. Disaster preparedness holiday begins May 28th. Freedom Week, which they did last year, is essentially a tax exemption on outdoor goods, if you will, camping supplies, hunting supplies, water supplies, and then also outdoor events. So think of a concert or also in person, not outdoor specifically. You can go to a show, but live events, and all as long as they're done before December 31st. So in theory, you could go to all the NFL games in Jacksonville or Tampa up until December 31st tax-free if you bought your tickets during the week of July 1. 7-day tool time sales tax. As you know, during the pandemic, we had a talent loss on many trades, but including construction, even though they did stay open somewhat. This is a sales tax holiday in September for those skilled trades, so you can get a tax-free hammer, if you will, and other things. Sales tax exemption on diapers and related items. And then that fuel sales tax that the governor asked for, he ended up getting it for October for 1 month, and that's mainly because you probably are well aware our high tide season for tourism is during the summer months, and it would have been too exorbitant of a cost to the state to do it in those months, so they did it in October. And a fun one Robert and I worked on, we got some sales tax exemptions for World Cup tickets if and when we get it in Orlando and or Miami, because that's something FIFA asked for, so hopefully that'll come in 2026.
500 tickets are now tax-free, too.
Yeah.
See that.
Very important note.
So any session sort of starts, the 60-day sprint starts with what the leadership priorities are. The speaker, the president, and the governor, and we'll talk through a couple of some of what those priorities were that set the stage for the session. Chris Sprowls, a former prosecutor himself, law enforcement was a critical topic for him, and first responders and hometown heroes, which Chris talked about a minute ago. The first House Bill 1 and number 1, not by chance, it was the most important bill to him. It's an additional homestead property tax exemption for first responders, kind of frontline workers, teachers, law enforcement, correctional officers, firefighters, you name it, and that'll be on the first $150,000 in value. So an additional exemption for those folks. That, of course, has to go to the ballot. It will require 60% vote to pass. The second second was House Bill 3, and that was about law enforcement recruitment. So sort of a Florida response to the national defund the police movement was to fund the police. So things like a $5,000 bonus if you leave another state to come be a law enforcement officer in Florida, $1,000 bonuses, reimbursements for $1,000 bonuses for training, reimbursements for the cost of training if you go to the academies. Those types of things were really important to the speaker, and those passed without really any significant fanfare other than a rallying cry of support. President Simpson had two real main priorities. I'll start with the second one, which was the Local Business Protection Act. What that does, and it was started out as a bill that local governments and any quasi-governmental entity was very, very concerned about because it would have allowed for a new cause of action against the local government if an ordinance or a change in your code cost that a business money and they could prove it. What ultimately happened was a three-year 15% rolling average that you had to prove, and it also had some watering down of when those suits can be filed. But it was sort of in response to the legislature's ingrained at this point feeling that local governments in some places are not treating businesses fairly, and this was a way to perhaps create a cause where businesses could respond. The second one was an environmental resources issue, really focused on the Everglades, and it dealt with the Lake O and the surrounding areas and how that water is drained and where it goes and how we're discharging. That was a bill that the governor's office actually got involved in very early on, concerns with the original drafting. They came back with a compromise bill that everybody could support, but it was one that got a whole lot of play. And, of course, the governor, Chris mentioned, he really is driving just about all of the decisions that are up there. Some of the things I've mentioned already, the law enforcement increased pay and the bonus structures. He recreated what's called the Florida State Guard to support the National Guard in times of emergencies. Chris mentioned the tax cut. Of course, teacher pay, that was fully funded again this year, even with a little bit of extra money for the longer tenured teachers and support staff, and then of course elections enforcement. He ran on, well, not ran on, but opening the session, his State of the State talked about the need for an election enforcement arm. He just signed that this week, and what that does is create an office within the Secretary of State to look at and go after election fraud cases as they may arise in Florida. So it was no surprise to anybody that followed this session that social issues really dominated a lot of the discussion. And I'm going to, as fast as I can, go through these four because these are the ones that you read a lot about. So things like the abortion ban. Florida enacted a 15-week abortion ban, really following the model of Mississippi. That's a law that's under Supreme Court review right now in Washington. And so we'll sort of know the fate of Florida's law vis-a-vis Roe v. Wade based upon what happens with the Mississippi bill. The Individual Freedom Act, this was what was really the CRT bill. That was signed just recently, and it creates, really, I think, for the private sector and the public sector for that matter, but an interesting dilemma about diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, employee training, handbooks, the things that are being required of employees as a condition of employment. How does that really all shake itself out? This bill will be challenged, and ultimately the courts will settle it. The parental choice in education bill, you've certainly seen a lot about this. That's a bill that has already been challenged immediately after its signing, and that is the one that prohibits instruction in grades K through 3 of gender identity and sexual orientation issues, and then thereafter it has to be age appropriate. And that's, you know, the one that was not so lovingly called the Don't Say Gay bill by the opponents. And then immigration. This was really something that took up more time than I think anybody expected, and it really was from the supporters of the bill what they viewed as a shot across the bow of the federal government to say, hey, enforce your laws in Florida, and if you don't, we will. The opponents of the bill would have said it was a manufactured crisis and a red meat issue just for an election year. The truth is probably somewhere in between those two extremes, but that was a bill that did take up a lot of time. And I mentioned those four, one, because two of them really impact the school district in some way, and again, the courts will ultimately settle those issues, and if one of them is thrown out, I would expect that some portion of it could be back, some variation of it could be back in the following session or even in a special. But I mentioned those to you just to kind of set the stage, like with the priorities of all the other things that are happening as we, on your behalf, are working on the Volusia-specific issues that we worked on this year.
So there's some other issues that we think will have some touch on the school board, and certainly some of your partners here, so we want to touch on them with digital infrastructure. One bill that was passed, you know, this legislative session is going to be known for a couple things. We'll talk about one that didn't pass, but we expect will be back, data privacy. This was a priority of the House, a loose priority of the Senate, certainly a priority of the governor as they take They try to rein in big tech, as it's referred to, but essentially it would have created a framework by which businesses in the state and all parties would have to regulate or manage our personal information. This polls very well across the board, Republicans, Democrats, Independents. Where the rub is the House wanted a private cause of action in their bill that would potentially set up class action lawsuits depending on the approach, and the Senate wasn't wanting to go along with that. That did not make it to the finish line in the regular session. We are hearing in speaking with our friends in the legislature that the special session that the governor just made official today, that would begin May 23rd, that special session will likely have an expanded call, and this would likely be a part of that expanded call. So we'll be paying attention to that and keep you apprised. Another one, again, this session is going to be known for a lot of things, some of the things that Robert just covered on social issues, but the state really got serious about cybersecurity this year, both in policy and funding, and you'll see some of those bullets there. They took the Cybersecurity Task Force recommendations and now require state agencies and local governments, they prohibit them from paying ransoms. Now, I'll say that that includes school boards, obviously, and we all know, I assume your CIO knows this better than anyone, of, you know, public entities, just as much as private, are targeted frequently for these black hat groups to hijack our system and then ransom it back. What's interesting, and I'm not encouraging this, but I'll just make sure because I tell you the law, you're restricted from paying a ransom, but interestingly, there's no penalty of if the local government is to pay the ransom. So I'll just say, do what you want with that. Make good decisions. Hopefully, you don't have to pay a ransom. It also requires to report the incident, so that you should definitely do. It requires training within 30 days of hire for new employees, obviously, to help them deal with those phishing attacks through emails and what have you, and then requires all the local governments to adopt standards to safeguard this data and IT. They put their money where their mouth is. You see over $100 million in funding there that is available, some of them through local grants, some of them at the state level, and including a $7 million appropriation to USF's Cybersecurity Center to do an assessment of the state and local government and where we're at. I see Kevin wants to add something on that.
I just wanted to point out for the board members that this does include a revision to Chapter 119 for cybersecurity, making it an exemption and confidential, so we do not have cybersecurity plans.
Excellent point. And so moving on, just a few local government issues we'll put on your radar that will be affecting your partners in the city and county. There were two major preemption bills, the green check mark, obviously that one passed and Robert covered it. There was another one that dealt with business impact statements and allowed for businesses to I guess in theory, more efficiently sue to shut down an ordinance if they thought it impacted them. Sovereign immunity, this is a big one. We covered some of this when we first met with you when we were brought on board. This bill did not make it to the finish line. It was discussed about raising the caps that are currently at 200 and 300,000 respectively, but it kind of got bogged down in its own weight of, is a million too high or too low? I think we would all, at least this room, agree it's too high, but that was part of the debate. And if you reduced it, is it per person, per incident, is it both, what have you? Kathleen Pasadomo, the incoming Senate president, she was probably the tip of the spear in the Senate and probably leading the negotiations and trying to make sure that if the caps are raised, it's done in a fair manner. That's not going to put, whether it's a school board or another local government, in a difficult position where their rates just go sky high from however they choose to insure at their level, and then also to make sure that the claims don't skyrocket either, right? Because if you go from 200,000, 300,000 to a million, some of our friends in the trial bar may look at these claims in a different light now that they know that there's more available before they have to go to the legislature for a claim bill. As well, local government financial disclosure. This bill was going to require the same disclosure at the local level that they have at the House level, which I think is called the Form 6. It's just a little more transparency. It didn't make it to the finish line, but I can assure you that will be back in future sessions. Tree trimming, this was a bill that kind of changed the wording on whether or not a homeowner could trim or take down their tree without the local government enacting or engaging. Public notices, this is a win for both schools and local governments as far as it last session they pulled back the requirements of what you have to put in your daily paper. This one completely takes it back, and now correct me on this, Robert, but I believe the way this is and it will be signed is you won't have to do any advertising in your local paper on your notices as long as you follow the procedures set forth in the bill for online. Smoking in public places, local governments can now regulate in beaches and parks, unless it's cigars. Kudos to the cigar lobby for getting their exception, but all other kinds of smoking can now be regulated and prohibited. And then local tax referendum, this goes into effect October, but Any referendum, including school referendums on taxes and millages and such, would have to go in a general election ballot, and that goes into effect October. So if something was already set for August, that would not be impacted by this. And so quickly, election reform. Don't worry, we already have secure and safe elections, at least the last go-around, but they'll now be more secure. This bill passed and actually was just signed by the governor yesterday. That was that bill Robert was referencing earlier that was outstanding. It creates that office in the Secretary of State's for election crimes and security, and they funded, the legislature funded 10 positions on that for them to do the investigations. Requires, if you're in a single-member district and it was redistricted, you don't get to wait the 2 years. Like if you're on a four-year cycle, you got to run right away for some of those county commission seats. Revises retention and information posting requirements for the ballot initiatives. And they got serious about ballot harvesting. Those of you, I don't think anyone here has to worry about ballot harvesting, but the maximum fine for a year was $1,000. That's two fines of a $500 each for ballot harvesting. They increased that to the maximum fine in a year of $50,000. So they really got serious about ballot harvesting, saying that's not okay. And you probably heard of drop boxes. That became a big no-no in certain circles in the state to say that word. So they changed that from secure drop boxes to secure ballot intake systems. That's what they are. So there you have it. Robert's going to jump in quickly with some higher education, and then we'll get jumping into the K-12 issues, which I'm sure you have some questions or at least want to discuss further.
Yeah, very quickly on some higher ed issues, things that'll be important to maybe you or some of your parents in the district. Bright Futures changes, there's always some every year. This was kind of a neat one this year. It allowed for paid work time to be substituted for the volunteer hours that were required under Bright Futures. That was, I wish that had been the case when I was growing up. I worked a lot and struggled sometimes to get the volunteer hours in, but that happened. On the post-secondary education side, really the second bill there is really all about the accreditation piece. There's a long story that I won't get into about a particular commissioner of education that thought that he might want to be the president of a state university. And that didn't happen because one of the accrediting agencies really stepped in and opposed that idea. As a result, all state universities now have to change their accreditation every, I think it's 5 years. And so that is another one that passed. This was a really important one. The next one, public records and public meetings. This is dates back years of effort, particularly in the Senate, to pass this bill. And it's the one that allows for state university and state college president applicants to be held not in the sunshine for a certain period of time. So what Florida has struggled with, or at least those who have searched for university presidents say we've struggled with, is that some of the best candidates in the country won't apply because they know that the moment that they hit the send button, it's a public record and anybody can find it. And if you've got a great job as the provost at an Ivy League school, but you want to be the president at UF, you may not apply because you're worried about losing the job that you got. And so everything still becomes public eventually, and the top three, when they shortlist, would ultimately become public quicker, but it hopefully will allow for more applicants, better applicants, looking at our state colleges and universities. And then this was just kind of a fun one. Florida likes to be position itself as the most veteran-friendly state. Here was one for reduced tuition and cost for our veterans. On the K-12 side, and we'll get into that. Is this me still? Okay. You see here the budget. There is an increase in the BSA and in the overall FEFP. That's good news. I think from at the risk of jumping the shark here with what we really spent a lot of time on your behalf working on was the floated concept of the $200 million penalty to schools that fell within the 12 districts that were at any point in time, even if it was just for a matter of days, not in compliance with the mask mandate rules at the state level. Originally, that $200 million would have come out of the FEFP, meaning a reduction to those districts. Still an increase year over year, but a reduction over what it could have otherwise been. Working in partnership with the Florida School Board Association and other districts that were impacted, we were able to move that $200 million out of the FEFP and into what more of a bonus pool almost of the district can apply for, but not impacting the underlying FEFP, which was a nice win for the districts.
Yeah, and working with Kevin and your team, we were able to also make it clear that it was if you were found to be in violation, actually, as opposed to if you were in theory in violation, but there was an actual finding, which should put us in good standing with that fund. So that was a win, and kudos to the House and Senate leadership as we made that case to them of giving them the timeline of what Volusia went through and why we should not be considered part of that dozen.
That was a big win, and you guys, thank you so much for your ability to get us
access based on the way that the wording in the final language came out. It's my opinion that we will be in line to apply for those funds just as any other district not sanctioned by the Department of Education.
Thank you.
Sure. Financial literacy in public schools. This is a hometowner for Volusia County. For all of her legislative career, the late Senator Dorothy Huckel fought to require financial literacy in schools, and they did it finally this year and named it after. It was a really sweet moment in the Florida legislature where they recognized and honored her legacy of service by passing this bill, and now it is a requirement for a half credit in high school to get your diploma. You must have some financial training or financial literacy courses. Another veteran-friendly bill was the trying to get more veterans into the classroom, waiving certain temporary certificate requirements to get them into the classroom. Still would have to, you know, pass all the things to be a fully certified teacher, but doing something to try to get veterans into the classroom, using their life and their service experience to serve our kids was something that everybody sort of rallied around. This was you mentioned instructional materials just a moment ago and some of the challenges there. This was really a two-part bill. It started with the House of Representatives wanting to strip the pay for all school board members statewide. The Senate was not willing to go that far. The Senate talked about 16-year term limits and keeping your pay. They ultimately settled on 12-year term limits that are not retroactive. They start this in November, but the pay remains, which was good news. And, of course, the instructional material issue, another part that will likely be challenged if it hasn't already, and that is going to create some level of process, a newer process for how instructional materials are examined, and of course you have the CRT issue now that's sort of overlaying that, but this creates a new process by which parents or community can talk about things that are in our library, category, what's the word? Catalogs, that's the word I was looking for. Student assessments, here's one. The governor talked a lot about this leading up to session, and it's one where bipartisan, almost universal agreement in the legislature, and I think here at this room, at the risk of taking a guess, that we're testing too much and moving to a level of not high-stakes tests but progress monitoring throughout the year. That's what this legislation ultimately did. The devil in that is always going to be in the details, but there was broad agreement that we needed to get away from the high-stakes testing, moving to more regular progress monitoring with one test at the end, and that's what this bill ultimately does. As we look ahead to the year,
it's probably worth noting, you see by Senator Diaz, a lot of these bills were by Senator Diaz, who, as you probably saw, is now the new appointed Commissioner of Education, replacing Commissioner Corcoran. So our firm has enjoyed a good relationship with him and look forward to working with him on your behalf. But obviously wrote those. We got a few more. We got
On charter schools, not compared to previous legislative sessions, not a lot happened in the charter school space. The big thing that did happen, I'll point it to, is that second bill, and that creates the charter school authorizing committee at the state level and the charter school review commission, giving that board power to review and approve applications at the state level. And then on the charter school, the Hawkins-Beltran bill, what that bill really does is make sure that there's at least a window. If a school gets shut down, there's a window there so that kids aren't left in a lurch or families aren't left in a lurch as charter schools are closed. That was at least the goal of that bill.
On concurrency issues, as y'all partner with the county in capacity, there's two bills that made it through the process, one by Senator Perry out of Gainesville area. And the two major changes is basically there has to be proportionate share mitigation must be directed by the school board toward a school capacity improvement identified in the five-year facilities plan or must be set aside, and here's the change, and not spent until such an improvement has been identified. And then as well, school board shall notify the local government that capacity is available for development within 30 days. I'll admit I'm not fully aware of if the issues that arise or don't arise here in Volusia. That's a major problem in some of the more urban parts of our state as developers try to move through and get capacity certification or not. And then education by Pre-K-12 Appropriations Committee, this is a budget bill they put out, but essentially requires a rolling wait list of sorts for enrollment on capacity and for school districts to provide that, and then a driving choice grant program to increase transportation access for folks that are there.
Chris goes to the next slide. On the concurrency bill, I'll just point out that really was that bill arose out of one particular development issue in Tampa. It really wasn't. It never started as a statewide issue. Most counties and school boards are getting along fine on those issues. And the first draft of that bill was, frankly, egregious in its treatment of school boards, and it was able to get moved in a good direction over time, thanks to some good advocates in the school board space to make it more palatable.
You know, another one, there was a campaign finance bill that had nothing to do with us or many folks there, and then at the late stage in session, there was an amendment offered that was going to rein in the local government advocacy, if you will. As you probably know, under current law, before this is changed, essentially allowed for local governments, including school boards, to provide factual information, but they couldn't take positions like sort of advocacy type or opinion of this increase in the millage or this increase or this reapproval, this sales tax will, you know, anything that's opinion-based. Because of the perception in certain school districts and other counties that, you know, flyers would be put in kids' backpacks, basically with factual, but all the information there that would shift the conversation, they made a reach, the legislature, to rein some of that in. Our team and others working on behalf of the League of Cities and Association of Counties and other partners of ours were able to get some of these exceptions put in there, and knowing that, look, we get it. You don't want someone to get cute with the rules and not be advocates, but put it in such a glossy way that it feels like advocacy. But on the other hand, whether it's a school board or a county or city, they should have the right to provide information. So you'll see those exceptions in there, whether it's a forum, a response to information, or reporting on official activity. You can now provide this information. But the law, just as an FYI, is changing there a little bit. And then bringing this in for a landing, and then certainly would love to answer any questions. We put this together of important dates before we thought about the special sessions occurring and reoccurring. We now have one called for May 23rd, so that should be thrown in there before the primary elections. I don't think we'll have special sessions after that, but I wouldn't rule it out, especially until the budget's signed sometime before July 1. But if there are no others, we have primary elections August 23rd, regular elections in November, and then an organizational session likely the week after. We, again, at the time when we put this together, thought there'd be a property tax special session in November, but that is in maybe 3 weeks. And then committee weeks, December through February, regular session in March, ending May 5th, Cinco de Mayo. And in the meantime, obviously that's an opportunity for us working with y'all to come up with priorities, whether they're appropriation priorities, whether there's policy issues. Every year there's got to be cleanup on K-12. You know, things that they did in good intentions, and then once they peel back the onion or pomegranate, whatever analogy you want to use, go, well, we didn't think this was going to occur. Let's fix that next session. And so that's an opportunity for us to work with you and come up with ideas on things that we can advocate and start working with the elected officials that we are expecting to be there next year. With that, Robert and I would love to take any questions or further flesh out some of the issues or get out of your way, as they say.
Thank you.
Is a much later.
It is. Well, it used to be the normal start of session. Going back 6 years ago, it was only every 10 years that the legislature met in January. Maybe 8 years ago that they started alternating even-numbered years in January, odd-numbered years in March. So that's where we're back to March for 2023 because it's an odd-numbered year.
So for the board, that is a relevant date.
Yeah, I would even ramp it up farther than that because what's going to end up happening, and Chris mentioned the dates, you'll have, as soon as organizational session happens in mid-November, they're going to have at least two committee meetings and two committee meeting weeks in December, at least two in January, usually three in February leading up to that start of session. So, you know, the sooner you can develop the priorities, whether it's in the, you know, early fall early fall, late fall to winter, that's when you really want to be sharing those with your delegation in December, January at the latest so that you're ready for that March session.
Yeah, it's really never too early. So if we know something we need next year, whether it's policy or appropriation, I mean, it's hard to fully predict the winners of elections, and we've got at least one contested primary here in Volusia that of two members, incumbent members. But generally, we know who your senator is going to be next year, or at least the main one, and then the person who chairs the north side of the county. And we have a general idea of who's going to be your representatives. And so the sooner we can go have those conversations with them of, hey, policy-wise, this is a priority, and to the extent you can work with us and from an appropriation side, same issue to the extent they can work with them. We're going to enjoy leadership in this part of the state, in the House and the Senate, especially in the House on both budget and policy. So we should take advantage of that, those partnerships that we have here for the county to make sure we bring home some good policy and some good appropriations.
Thank you so much. Ms. Cuthbert.
If I have a question about House Bill 3, if you could, the law enforcement officer benefits. I also saw one of the details in which the governor wanted to give law enforcement officers the benefit if the officer had children who were at K through 12 age, they could get a HOPE scholarship. Did that pass? Is that part of it?
I think that is in there. I'll confirm that for you, and I'll get back with Kevin to get you the answer. I believe that piece was in there as well.
Okay, and that what that does is that gives children the opportunity to go to a private school on the public dime. I think I would like a follow-up.
I'll make sure that I get you the answer.
Ms. Haynes.
Go back to the cybersecurity piece. With what we're facing right now with cybersecurity cost, it just keeps going up and up, and it's taking away large portions of our budget. That means we're taking it away from kids because schools are like the number one target right now, or school districts. So is that cybersecurity piece going to make any difference for us? Because I think that that almost has to become a piece of the priority, because what we're having to pay out in cybersecurity and the drastic jump that has happened, you know, at some point, when do we say enough is enough?
So, and I pulled the slide back up so we can reference it. You'll see there $35 million was set aside for DMS and the Chief Information Officer, Jamie Grant, former House member, to distribute to local government as grants. We should immediately, whoever the right person is on your team, to connect with us to get a good, better understanding of what those costs are and why, and what we've been doing about it. And Robert and I both know the CIO very well and know the folks at DMS. We can set meetings to at least discuss, okay, how soon are you going to roll out those grants? What's going to be the criteria? We'd like to be on that list so that we can supplement or offset, if you will, so that you can dedicate more of your funds towards instruction and staff and what have you.
Well, because, I mean, we've already taken steps ourselves. You know, once the legislation came down and we hired an internal auditing firm that reports to the board, I mean, the first internal audit we did was on, you know, our cybersecurity piece and the penetration of that. But we're getting ready to have to pay for another full-blown audit on that piece because we can't let it go since, you know, school districts are the number one target. So when you're wanting to do an internal audit on another area to see can we streamline, you know, can we save money, we keep having to come back to this area, pay out for another audit here, and then pay higher cost to be insured because of what they're doing. So we need to know that, because that's money coming away from our classrooms where our kids are. And if I heard you correctly, I want to make sure, on the public notices, we're no longer going to have to advertise in the newspaper.
There are ways that you're going to still have to advertise,
right.
But generally speaking, my understanding of the way that bill ultimately fell, and we'll get the staff analysis and the final bill analysis to Kevin and your team to review it, because obviously we want to make sure that you're in total and full compliance with the public notice requirements, is that the whatever was left outstanding from the bill 2 years ago that still had to be put in the paper, those were basically all removed. So as long as you're on the website, as long as you're using the state's general consensus website for all public notices, there's a few places that you still have to do it, but it's my understanding virtually everything can now go online.
We were looking to go to online website notice for publications for meetings like this and public notices, but that will be a big benefit. I can tell you that my office, typically for all policies, have to be printed in the paper. Those are large expenses that we have, cost savings to the district.
Thank you. And just one final thing. On that Bright Futures Scholarship Program, if I understood you correctly, it's always had the volunteer hour piece. And we did run into a problem when, you know, the pandemic started, and students couldn't get out there to volunteer. And so they did, at that point, adjust that piece. But if I understand correctly, we're now going to allow paid work hours to also count in replacement of the volunteer
and count for that piece, yes, ma'am.
Okay, and that to me, I mean, I'm all about volunteering because I think it teaches leadership and it teaches a love for your community and things like that. But we've got kids that they're helping, you know, support their homes. And so I think that is a win-win that we're going to allow them paid work hours to also count. Because you hate to take this kid who's a bright kid that could have that scholarship, but he or she needs to work to help, you know, put food on the table in their home.
And you've really nailed that. Was a lot of the discussion up there this year. We did get the question a couple of weeks ago at a presentation like this where they were asked if that possibly counts for this year's senior class. I don't think it does. But we'll confirm that for you and get you that answer as well. So I didn't mean to cut you off. I apologize.
No, thank you. And because once you do know, I think we need to get that word out to our parents. Because I don't know if you guys were here earlier, but you know, we held teen job fairs last week on the east side of the county and the west side, and the west side had 507 come through the door, and there were even parents that some of the companies allowed to fill out applications because there's parents looking for jobs too. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Persis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is there any truth to the rumor that Elon Musk is going to buy the state of Florida and create his own country? And no? Oh, there is.
I haven't heard that one
You
yet.
Haven't heard it yet.
I haven't
yet.
Heard that one yet.
All right. Well, I am happy to hear that. Or maybe I'm not. I'm not so sure. I got to tell you, this is like the best, most comprehensive legislative summary I think we've ever had. So just kudos to you guys and your firm, and maybe to you, Kevin. You want a little bit of credit for that too?
It's no, all the credit.
No, okay. So forget Craig Kevin on the credit part. But no, I think y'all have done a super job. Was there any legislation that made it to the finish line that would help expand internet access in rural countries and places where they do not have it now?
Yes, I want to, if I get the number right, and I can get you the exact number, I think there was a lot of money last year, but there was another $400 million, I believe, added in this year's budget. Again, they were looking for non-recurring costs so that they didn't, you know, bind future sessions and future legislatures, and that was one of them. And they used a lot of the federal dollars coming down. Those will be overseen by DEO and Dane Eagle's team over there. But yes, so to the extent the county wants to look into that, we should, because there is a lot of money in the hundreds of millions in that.
And we are participating with Volusia County.
Whatever information you can provide. That's it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Haynes again.
I had one final statement. We didn't have this PowerPoint presentation provided to us before the meeting, so will it be provided to us now so that we will have access to it and it can be posted for those that will go back and view it?
Of course.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Burnett.
That's exactly what I was going to ask. but also, and this actually, it's more for Dr. Shanoff, I think, than you guys, but it kind of played into this. And that's, Dr. Shanoff, could we get an update with all the building that's going on and the growth and where we stand with what our projection is for the schools, for the students? Because I know we've talked about that before, but it was before you came, and I think since then there's a lot more growth.
We are working with the county on those concurrency issues and collaborating with them to bring that information for growth management purposes and for school purposes.
And I'm sorry, I know you probably don't have all the information today. I just thought maybe an update soon, but if you have something, great.
We try to keep our planning and business website updated, so those numbers are typically updated by Stephanie's office regularly. But we can make sure that those numbers continue to get published.
Thank you, Ms. Cuthbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one question. I saw in the very beginning when you divvied up all the different billions going into each priority, I saw that transportation has been increased. Does that mean our transportation will increase that category? I mean, are we able to then hire more bus drivers if they're available in order to reduce our school bus routes that you probably heard?
You mean within the FEFP category? So I think the short answer to that question is probably yes. I think the longer answer is transportation at the district level is grossly underfunded, even when they give you an increase. So my guess is, you know, you're going to get a little bit more than you would have gotten, and it still isn't enough to hardly do what you're doing, much less hire more. There was a bill, and actually that's a good reminder, there was a bill that was heard very early on in the session that would have allowed districts, not required them, but allowed districts to transport via bus at 1 mile instead of two. The current statutory level is two. That may be a good idea in principle for some families and students, but there was no money attached to it, and that would have been a monumental cost because, again, you wouldn't have had to have done it, but how long would it have taken for the drumbeat in this community to ask you to do it, and then you don't have any funding to go along with it. So we expect issues like safe pathways to schools and transportation funding to come back next year. There was also a bill that would have allowed at the risk of getting something thrown at me, I don't know how popular red light cameras are in this community, but there was a bill that would have allowed for districts to have cameras to enforce the people who run the stop signs on school buses. And that bill, it's filed every year, never moves, and it actually moved this year. And that's money that it didn't pass, but that's money that theoretically could be put back into transportation funding for school districts if and when it were to ever pass. So some of those conversations are happening. The last thing I'll say, at the risk of belaboring the point, there is an OPAGA study going on right now that was funded in the 2021 legislative session about safe pathways to school. And, you know, there's laws on the books that haven't been looked at in 30 years. So the OPAGA study was designed, and I don't know what the end result will be. We'll know in July. But it was designed to come back to the legislature with some ideas, best practices around the country, you know, who's doing what right and wrong and where. And that may drive some of that conversation again. But there is universal understanding and appreciation, at least at the school district level around the state, that the money we give for transportation more is great, but it's still underfunded.
And just to let you know, we have received national honors for our OPAGA studies. And the work that we've done here. So just thought you'd like
on the transportation issue? Okay.
Yes.
Good to know. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? So I have a question on the bill that they're talking about putting on the ballot as far as the teacher's $150,000. How are they defining teacher? Is that their traditional only classroom rostered teachers, or are we covering all teachers?
That is a great question, Mr. Chairman. I don't know off the top of my head. We can get you that answer of how they defined it. My guess is classroom teachers, but it may have been broader than that. So I can find out, and we can get back to you.
Yeah, they've usually, when they make that reference, they're referring to instructional staff, but that's not always the case, and we'll get you that specific answer. Because we know some of your media specialists and others don't qualify necessarily as instructional.
Yeah, and actually I heard something really interesting. I think it was Mike Springer actually was on WNDB, and he was talking about that, and they were talking about, you know, it's a great thing, we are all about that, but what about a teacher who rents, who the landlord has to pass on that tax increase to them and doesn't get the benefit even though a teacher is living in that property? So is it really all teachers? The answer is only teachers who are property owners, so it's really complicated, and again, there was the question of how do they define teacher.
I think it would make it very complicated for a tax commissioner to ferret that out as well.
On the
tax bill, your trim notice, if you have an exemption check there, somebody's got to verify that.
Wow. So definitely. Well, again, thank you so much for this amazing presentation. We really appreciate it and look forward to receiving the presentation so we can read it.
I imagine you've got it, so there you go.
Thank you. And also, Board, it sounded to me like we probably need to plan on a workshop
for our legislative priorities so we can get ahead of it. So we'll plan on that as well. If there's a consensus, I see lots of heads going as such. So,
Mr. Chair, if I may, I was going to say, on that, we always encourage at the local level. It feels like in Tallahassee sometimes they're picking on, not picking up our local governments or our school districts. But I do feel, and the folks we partner with and work with up there, that they want to be helpful. They think they're being helpful, right? So I think if we have ideas, that's not just defense, but, hey, a little offense. Give us this right to do this. Or did you realize because of this law that we have to do this and it's superfluous? Or let us go to them and say, hey, fix this for us and let us work with it. And I know some of y'all are wondering, I worked at Blockbuster. He worked at Einstein Bagels. Those were our high school jobs when we also had to volunteer. But we really appreciate the partnership. We're looking forward to having more wins next session, and we look forward to finding those cool issues that we can go play offense on, as well as appropriations. So thank you for having us today.
Great. Thank you so much. All right. Next item we're going to go to is 6.01, which is consent agenda. Believe it or not, we haven't even spoken about consent yet. All right. Board members, there was an item that was removed initially, which was 8.04. Does anybody have any other consent agenda items they'd like to discuss? Haynes?
Item 11.02, item 11.03, and then I'll save it till later. I have a comment about an item that was on the last board meeting.
Do you want to have that discussion first, or do you want us to take care of those individually?
We can have discussion if that's
right. Great. So we will seek approval of the – actually, let's go ahead and talk about them. So 11.02, Ms. Haynes.
So on 11.02, this is that parent pickup loop at DeBerry, and they're bringing forth an action that we're going to save some money on this right now. It's a decrease. Here's my biggest issue. When the city of DeBerry chose to do the study, and then they came and partnered with us and said they were going to pay for half of the cost of this loop, which, to me was a great thing. I think cities partnering with us is the best thing because we knew it was a safety issue. Well, the city of DeBerry not only partnered, did the traffic study, figured everything out, put forth half of the money to do this loop. They have even since then, they have been using city staff to actually get the cars off of High Banks, and they opened up one of the ball fields, and they're running three lanes or loops of traffic there every afternoon, and they're manning it, the city of DeBerry is. They're manning it, and they're communicating with the school and releasing only so many cars at a time so that they're not blocking High Banks where an emergency vehicle or whatever can't get through. That project, though, was really scheduled to be finished by now. And I've driven past there. It's not started yet. So, I'm happy to see there's a decrease. But I've got a community that they've taken the money from DeBerry, and the community supported it. The DeBerry city staff is running this so that we can, we could keep it safe this year. And that loop's supposed to be finished, and it's not really started. And in addition to that, we've got a new school year coming. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know what the community's going to do if we don't have a loop when the school year starts. And I don't know how much longer we can say to the staff of the city of DeBerry, hey, will you keep dealing with our afternoon, and morning parent pickup and drop-off, and will you continue to use your staff to make sure that our kids are safe.
So we have two issues. First of all, we've been meeting with the city the entire time. City's a partner on this. They've been a partner on this project. city's well aware of the timeline. We had to resubmit permits for this project when the city put in a turn lane on that back side of the gate. When they put the turn in, we had to halt all of our permits and resubmit our permits, set our project date back. So the turn lane and the permitting that had to be resubmitted to St. John's Water District as a result is what's holding up this project. This project was ready to go. We had engineered this project. We had designed this project. We had to wait until we had the appropriate permitting before we were able to come back and do it.
Is it going to be ready in time for the fall when school opens?
I can't promise a date because I can't be sure where the supply chain issues are. We have a project timeline. That project timeline has been published. So we would like to have it done by the first day of school, but we have run into some issues with that new turn lane requiring us now to have to go back and get new permits.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
My other one, 11.03, so Dr. Shanoff, you may want to stay right there, is, once again, I'm pleased to see this, but it's a reduction in the dollar amount for the changes at Woodward. I recently went to one of the meetings at Woodward Avenue Elementary, and if you guys haven't looked at it yet, and I understand if you haven't, because I actually think we need some, you know, more time for us to see some of like what the plan is, but they're going to add a building with 11 classrooms at Woodward and new administrative offices. They're going to add a new cafeteria at Woodward. But as far as the main building sitting at Woodward, they're going to push out the media center a little, but we have internet issues at Woodward. And we also, in my opinion, we have some restroom issues in that main building that, you know, is how many years old, built back in the 1950s. And when that came up, none of that was considered in this. And I just still go back to the amount we're paying, and I understand costs have gone up slightly, but we're almost paying to just add these two pieces to Woodward and push the media center out, what we're paying to build the new beachside school. And so it's just hard to say, well, we can build a brand new school and we know it will have state of the art and the internet will work and the kids will, you know, have bright new classrooms, and yet we're not doing anything to that main building. And I don't know how many of you have ever been in Woodward into the main building, but the restroom issues, they weren't designed at the time when we had the handicap requirements and space things and all of that. And when I went to a meeting there recently and the teachers themselves attended and they brought up the fact about the internet, well, what was said to them, and maybe it's not a good thing that I did technology at one point, but what was said to them is, oh, it's not your internet wiring. Like, it's the devices that technology services is buying. Okay. You and I can go into the store any day of the week and buy a device, and we can't say it's the device if we go home and our internet is not working. It's the wiring in our house, or it's the routers or whatever. And so none of that's being looked at. So, like, I see this savings here, but, and I'm all about savings, but my thought is maybe the savings needs to go into ensuring that the main building gets some internet upgrades and or looks at the restrooms that, you know, because we're patching an old school, and I'm not a proponent of patching old schools. So that's what I wanted to say about that.
Very good. Any questions, thoughts, feelings, or concerns? All right. So we will seek to approve the consent agenda minus item 8.04, which we have agreed to listen to at the next meeting. Do we have a motion?
Yeah. Go ahead. I move approval of the consent agenda minus item 8.04.
I'll second.
Motion's been made by Mr. Persis, seconded by Ms. Cuthbert. Any further discussion?
Did you have any public comment on the consent?
There's no cards.
Awesome.
Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say nay. Motion passes. Next item, 16.01, superintendent's announcements and comments.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have several announcements to make. Tomorrow, Wednesday, April 27th, our Futures Tomorrow's Leaders graduation is from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Museum of Arts and Sciences. Administrative Professionals Day is also tomorrow. We certainly appreciate all the work on the people who run our offices. I know I'm very grateful for the ones in mine. Futures First Year Teacher Awards is Thursday, April 28th, 5 to 7 p.m., back at the Museum of Arts and Sciences. May is Military Appreciation Month. Children's Mental Health Awareness Week is May 1st through the 7th. National Teacher and Substitute Teacher Appreciation Week is May 2nd through May 6th. School Principals Day is May 1st. School Lunch Heroes Day is May 6th. Our Futures Turnaround Awards will be Friday, May the 6th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Jackie Robinson Ballpark. Immediately following that, the Tortugas Teacher Appreciation Night will start at 7 p.m. Our next board workshop will be Tuesday, May 10th at 12:30 p.m. in this boardroom, followed by our regularly scheduled school board meeting at 4:30.
Thank you so much. Any questions, thoughts, feelings, or concerns? Ms. Haynes?
I'd like to add that also tomorrow evening we have the reception celebrating the 2021-22 Art of Reflection and Response Teacher Institute, and we have 26 teachers that have successfully completed the institute, and so this is where we divide and conquer. I will be at the museum here in DeLand to help celebrate those 26 teachers while you guys are celebrating students.
Thank you. Next item up, 19.01, board action item, approval of superintendent's employment agreement. Mr. Dorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the direction of the board and under the supervision of Chairman Colon, I prepared a pretty simple and sweet agreement for the interim superintendent, Rachel Hazel. She's approved the language as well. It increases her pay to be commensurate with that of her position while she holds it. She is an at-will employee, which means she can be terminated at any point in time. By the same token, she also has the right to resign at any point in time. It does provide her with a guarantee that she would return to her original position if she resigned as superintendent or if she was terminated as superintendent, as she will be at some point when a new superintendent is appointed. So with that, if you have any questions, I'm glad to answer.
Haynes. Hear the list. Anybody have any questions? We do have a public comment card. Do we want to go ahead and hear that first? All right, Ms. Kim Short, 3 minutes. Welcome.
Hello, Chairman Colon, board members, interim superintendent, Ms. Hazel. I just wanted to say a couple things about this contract, because I haven't heard anything said yet, and I'm assuming that the board's going to have this conversation. I've sat through the hiring and firing and everything in between with quite a few people so far since Dr. Smith, when I started attending school board meetings in 2012. And I first want to say I'm very happy with your selection of an interim superintendent. In my time of knowing Ms. Hazel, I can honestly say that I know nobody who is as good at helping with culture. And I had several administrators reach out to me after this meeting when you guys appointed her as the interim superintendent to tell me that they just wanted her to stay. They're really happy that somebody that they trust is in the job, and I did want to say that publicly because I think it's something that needs to be said. I've seen boards appoint people, and I've seen it go very poorly. I would ask the board to hesitate on that, no matter what your feelings are. Not that I had any issue with any of the names that I heard thrown around, just that the process is really important. Including the community in the process of how you hire a superintendent, and having sat through and worked on that process as somebody who was appointed to be on the last one, I can tell you that regardless of what the result is, getting a community behind somebody who's going to be your new leader is critical to their success and to all of us feeling like we can be a cohesive unit to moving forward. I don't think that there's anything more important to the success of this district than what we do next as far as leadership goes. There's an election going on. I've seen people get appointed. I've seen contracts get extended. I've seen a lot of things happen right before an election, and it didn't go well for that person. I'm just speaking from experience. I would ask you guys to really think about what you have here. And I know, part, you know, I know Ms. Hazel, this is not her dream job. This is not what she wanted to sign up for. She's just that good person who is a grower, she's planted kind of girl, and she's going to do the job. But I would ask if she would consider staying in place for the sake of our district until you have a new board in place and you can go through a proper process. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Short. Board, we have the contract for approval. Do we have a motion?
I make the motion to have Ms. Rachel Hazel as our superintendent.
Approve her contract?
Approve the contract.
Wonderful. Approve. Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion's been made by Ms. Burnett, seconded by Mr. Persis. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say nay. All right. Do we have any more public participation cards? Nope. All right. Items from the board. We'll go around. We'll start with Mr. Persis.
I don't have much of a voice and don't have much of a brain either, so I'm just not going to say anything right
now. Good. Ms. Cuthbert?
But I do, except for congratulations. I'm glad you're going to get paid now. Good thing.
Cuthbert?
I just want to make sure that when graduations come up, I mean, we're all just attending our own schools, correct?
I'll be attending all of the graduations.
Attending all of them also.
Okay. But otherwise, yeah, as vice chair and chair, otherwise everyone is just doing. Okay. I just wanted to make sure everything's
good. Yeah, everyone's welcome. I mean, if you're around, by all means. Anybody else? Ms. Burnett.
This is running quick, isn't it? So I already spoke about what I needed to with Dr. Shanoff, and I'm looking forward to all of our futures events coming up this week. And being on the VCCPTA, that's a banquet coming up that I'm looking forward to, and our second family networking night. It'll be exciting. Hopefully next year we can get those in person or on Zoom if we wanted to. But it's still a good opportunity, and I hope we all are able to attend that or get a lot of parents to attend. I know last board meeting we all had some, it was very emotional for all of us, and I would just like to finish any loose ends that we may have had, and that was, and Mr. Dorn, you can speak here, but is there a reason that we should have considered the termination to be with cause?
None that I'm aware of.
And what and the board, what does the board think about that?
I agree with Mr. Dorn.
We've already voted on it.
Right, but I voted, and I'm allowed to bring that back by Robert's Rule of Orders.
Actually, legally, you're not.
Oh, I'm not.
You cannot bring it back.
Oh, okay.
Once he's terminated, you would have to rehire him. He would have to agree to be rehired. Okay. Then you would have to terminate him again. Obviously, well, none of that's going to occur.
Okay. I just felt like it was my duty as a representative to the voters to bring that back since it was such a substantial amount of money.
Yeah. I mean, it's not an option.
Okay.
Legally, it's just not an option at this point.
Done. Thanks.
Ms. Haynes?
So to piggyback on what Mrs. Burnett was just stating, I actually talked to Mr. Doran about this. And I'd like to say that it was a little stressful at the last meeting. And one of the things that I regretted after the meeting that I wished I had done was between the workshop and the meeting, I met with Mr. Doran back in a conference room during that time because each of you were given a copy of, like, what the salary payout, you know, was going to be for Dr. Fritz because I had made that request. And so, you know, what we know and what gets translated to the public sometimes, if we don't clarify it or explain it, it goes a different way or a different direction. And so I wish that the last time I had taken a few moments at that point to kind of explain where we were when we were looking at the payout. Because what I now know after talking to a lot of people is they didn't understand the amount. And it's because we didn't tell them that a large portion of his payout was due to his sick leave and annual leave. And so some people question, like, well, why was that so large? Because he wasn't here very long and he was, you know, out a lot. But, you know, if anyone wants to go back and look at that November when we were doing his contract and we were putting forth to hire him, in his contract, it was written that he got to bring over all of his leave from Osceola. And I did question that at that time because I said all those hours that he's bringing over whenever, you know, he leaves Volusia, whether he, you know, made a choice to leave, he waited till retirement from here or whatever, we were going to pay it out at a higher rate of pay than what he had earned it. And so I think the public deserves the right to know that a large portion of that was because of the sick leave and annual leave that he had that we had to cash out. But that's for any employee. I mean, that would be for a paraprofessional, a bus driver, a schoolway cafe, a teacher, you know, anyone that is stepping out of this system, they get their annual leave and sick leave. Like, we don't take that from them and say you don't get paid for it. And so I thought that needed to be shared. And then there's been the argument about, well, if he'd left at a different time, maybe there wouldn't have been as large of a payout. But whether he left that night, which started the next day, whether he waited till June 30th, or whether he waited till the end of November, he still was due all of that money. And actually, as we went along, he would have continued to accrue additional days, and that payment piece would have gone up. And so I'm just saying that I apologize after, because I spent a lot of time with Mr. Doran and went line item by line item with what the state statute said, as well as what the contract said. And I just feel like the public just needed to know, because I don't like there being a misperception or people stating that, you know, we just handed him a large sum of money. No, that was time that he had earned. And so the only part that he actually received other than the payouts for that was his 20 weeks pay, which is state law. And so I think the community needs just to hear that. But the other things that I had tonight, if everybody will bear with me for a few minutes, I wasn't joking when I said to Mr. Strother tonight, who's going to go to High Banks Learning Center, the behavior on some of our campuses is out of control. And it's not due to the teachers. It's not due to the administrators. I think it started off at the beginning of the year with maybe the way the Department of Justice report was interpreted and what we could or could not do. But I don't want to lose any more teachers, paraprofessionals, bus drivers, bus attendants, or administrators because of this behavior piece. And we say that we have a zero tolerance, but I just don't think we're there right now. And it took a lot for that teacher to come speak at our meeting last time and tell us, you know, here's a student that's getting in trouble all the time, and they're just getting a one day because they're a repeat offender. And then here's this kid that for the first time does something wrong, and, you know, the book gets thrown at them. And we're saying to kids, well, then it's not equitable for them also. I really would like to have some kind of conversation as we're finishing up this year and moving into next year where we give our principals back the authority on their campuses and our teachers to do what they need to do for behavior and put a stop to this, because we're kids think they can just get away with things. And I was at DeLand Middle when it went into a lockdown and a young girl had been hurt. And just that just took away so much instructional time that day. And that's what our schools are facing. They're losing instructional time. So I think that should be a priority. And I understand we don't do operations, but I think we have to agree to say we're not gonna allow these behaviors to continue on campuses. And if you're going to act this way, then you're going to go to another site, and it's going to be very controlled. I met with the audit committee this week already, along with the auditors, and we'll be bringing forth we unanimously selected the next four audits, two to finish out this year and two for next year, and we'll be bringing that forth for all of you to vote on. But this cybersecurity piece is really tough right now, and so that's why I asked those questions on that. But we had great discussion in that meeting, and I think you're going to be happy with the list. They came up with 10 more of the high-risk areas, but we prioritized them. So I'm looking forward to sharing that with all of you. I wrote another email today because I've heard from parents about the graduation schedule for this year. I've requested, and I don't know how the rest of you feel about it, but I've requested that our graduation schedule go back to what it was previously. Friday is a really tough day. And I asked them to actually do an analysis, because on Friday we've got Seabreeze High first thing in the morning, followed by University High, followed by DeLand High, followed by Taylor Middle High. That is a school day, so that is a work day for most parents. So we've got parents having to take off work. If their child that's graduating has siblings, they're having to make a choice of, do they take the siblings out of the school? Which, yes, you want your brothers or sisters there, and a parent wants them to see what, you know, their older child has accomplished. And then in addition to that, though, and this is the part I think, and I brought this up and nobody paid attention, I've got one school alone that has 8 teachers on campus whose children are graduating this year, and the principal's child is graduating this year. So they deserve the right to be at their child's graduation. So what are we doing at that school to provide coverage so that they can be there? So I want the graduation schedule to be looked at to go back to the way it was. It didn't bother me that it was on the weekends. I mean, I've been there and stayed the whole time, and I think we need to put our kids and our parents first, because this is their day. They've worked hard for this, and I don't think the schedule should be built to accommodate us as adults. I think it should be built to accommodate them. And then another thing that came up kind of in the audit meeting is one of the audit findings, but we thought maybe instead of making it a priority in the top four we're looking at right now, that maybe we could do a workshop on it, is the ESSER 3 money and like a detailed piece of where we're at, and has that funding actually gone to support non-reoccurring items versus reoccurring, because that money's going to go away. And if we've put a bunch of reoccurring things there, then we're going to be in trouble, because how are we going to financially support those? And so I would like a workshop, if the rest of you are in favor of that, to look at that. Because ultimately, we are responsible because of the size of that. You know, we have to approve that because of how much money it is. And so I just don't want to be caught unawares or be surprised and find out we were funding something that's reoccurring and now we're not going to have the funding for it when that money is gone. And my final item is this. Back on Friday, March 18th at 4:50 p.m., well, no, that's when I answered, sorry. On March 18th at 1:53 p.m. is when we actually received the email, and all of you were on it, where we were, the special school board meeting for March 22nd was canceled. And I left all of you on it when I responded because my response had nothing to do with anything we were voting on. And I shared, you know, my concerns and quoted policy on that about the canceling of that meeting. But in that first email, it talked about, you know, the information going on the April 12th. And so at the end of that email, I asked that I would like an item placed on the school board agenda for Tuesday, April 12th. It was not placed on the agenda for Tuesday, April 12th. It's not on the agenda for today, and partially because when Mr. Doran responded to me on that Monday, March 21st at 2:40 in the afternoon, he basically said I had to bring it forth and you guys would have to agree for it to go on an agenda. So I'm bringing it forth tonight to see either one, can we have a discussion about it, or does anybody support me with it going on the next school board agenda? And what I was looking at, and I have brought this up since I learned this information in December, is about a discussion of the evaluation and contract renewal terms for the school board attorney. And because when I sat through that training in December, what I learned, and I've actually had some other school districts send me, like, the evaluations that they use to evaluate their attorney, I'm in a tough spot. 95% of the time, I will always take the high road. I don't believe in airing dirty laundry because it doesn't do our students any good, our families or our communities any good. But it's been rough lately. It's been very rough. And what we just recently went through was hard. It was even harder to some degree because I'm struggling with communicating with our own school board attorney on some of these things. Because even when I go back and look at the contract and, you know, all the detailed information, there was a lot of holes in that contract, you know, where it said, like, in Section 9, it says refer back to Section 4, and you go back to Section 4, and what you're supposed to find there is not there. But beyond that, you guys have been on a few of the emails where Mr. Doran has, you know, claimed, like, he called one day, and I was actually either on the phone with my daughter or with a principal at the time because I had those two calls back-to-back, and I didn't switch off and take his call, and he immediately sent an email that stated, you know, I'm not taking his call, and I'm not talking to him. I mean, and that email went out within moments, okay? So I personally didn't know that if my phone rang and it was Mr. Doran calling that I needed to immediately hang up with whoever I was talking to talk to him. I've struggled since November, though, talking to him. I don't take well to being threatened. And I, even my brother, you know, reached out to me because Mr. Doran reached out to him and asked my brother if he would set up a meeting. And I shared some things with my brother, and he said, no, I didn't, you know, he wasn't going to facilitate that for me. So there are times when we need some strong advice sitting in this place and the things that we have to do. And Carl, I'm going to apologize to you right now. Because last June when that contract came up, you know, I asked questions because I asked about what state law said and all of that, knowing what I had dealt with federal programs. And so I'm apologizing to you tonight that I did not go with the motion that you made. But I'm just surprised to know that there's never been an evaluation, and I'd like to know how everyone else feels about that.
Right. So I personally can support having the conversation, and I think it's I support having it on the agenda for discussion. I don't know anybody else.
Workshop setting, I would.
That's what you prefer?
Because, you know, from where I sit, if any of us have an issue with any of our employees, and we only have two, one sitting there and one sitting there, you know, we need to go to them personally, individually, and we need to hammer it out as you know, as much as we can. I mean, sometimes it's just miscommunication. Sometimes somebody thought someone said it, or they misinterpreted what the email said. There's lots of reasons to have a professional relationship go sideways. I mean, we're all human beings. So if, in fact, you know, you have any just not a good feeling about what's been going on lately with Rachel, I'm saying now, or with Ted, you know, that you would just call them up and say, hey, you know, we need to talk. And just sit down and talk. Because the feeling that you had with your personal conversation, it may be something I'm not even, you know, I didn't have the same conversation. Or I didn't. So I know if I've ever had an issue with Dr. Fritz or with Ted, I just call him up, and you know, I can get mad and say, "Hey, what are you talking about?" Or blah blah blah, blah, you know. And then we just figure it out. I said, "All right, next time, do this, or at least I don't want to be the last to know, or whatever the issue was." But I think Jamie, to your point about evaluations of attorneys, whether they're school board attorneys or city or county attorneys, in my experience, they don't have evaluations. I mean, they really rarely have an evaluation. They get, I mean, when I say an evaluation, you know, something like we do with the superintendent, where there's all this criteria and you score it and all that. The most common practice is they just go around, and everyone says how they feel, and you know, pros and cons. But everyone gets a chance to just say how they feel. Normally, I would say that that particular city attorney or county attorney, in my case with Dan Eckert, for a long time, and Randy Hayes in Ormond Beach, they would say, look, you know, I am right here. You all see me every meeting. If you have any issue, you know, call me. Let's kind of work it out. And that's what we always did. So by the time it was that time of year when you gave those employees, in the county's case, when you gave them a raise, the county manager and the city manager, it was done annually. And it was kind of based at that same meeting when everybody went around and shared their thoughts. And they came up with a consensus, if you will, of, you know, how much we're going to give for next year's raise. I don't know if there's any perfect way. I mean, I'm not saying that that's absolutely the right way. I think because, even though, you know, we have two employees and they are in touch with us all the time, I mean, it's very easy for us to just say to them, hey, you know, something's bothering me. I really need to talk with you privately. Can we do that? And kind of figure it out. But then, of course, if you see a pattern of the same thing and it's not getting any better, then I understand. I don't know where we are. I mean, we signed a contract with Mr. Doran for 3 years, and that's the way it is. The way I see it. So, I mean, if you want to have a workshop or something, Mr. Chair, but I don't know. The workshop has to have some kind of a end to it. Like, why are we doing it, and you know, outcome, or if we just have some questions, if board members have some questions, you want to clear the air on something.
So personally, I didn't look at it as a Mr. Doring thing versus a process thing. So we did learn of other school districts that have tools, and one of the things I like about tools is it allows us to provide feedback. A lot of times when you end up with blowouts, it's because folks didn't communicate. It's just what you described. Yeah. And I'm not saying this is the case, but this gives us an opportunity to say, hey, these are the areas that I think, and it also gives him an opportunity, but I'm not... For me, it's not so much a thought of Mr. Doran as much as it is, you know, when I am not sitting here, is there an instrument that we could provide feedback to? So I'm not looking at it as a Mr. Doran thing as much as I'm looking at it as a discussion about the possibility of having a tool to evaluate our attorney.
I'm more of a personal person, and as a principal, if I had an issue with a teacher, it's not just the tool I use to score her. It's if things aren't going right, we just talk and we make it right, or we fix it, and we hope to fix it. And if by the end of the year it's not fixed, then maybe there's something else. But nothing replaces the private personal interaction that you have with an employee if you are the supervisor.
Thank you, Ms. Cuthbert.
My experience with Mr. Doran has ranged for the last 7 years, 5 months, through the firing of 3 superintendents, appointing an interim, 4 interim superintendents. And I'm counting Mr. Russell's interim, Dr. Balgobin, Tim Egner, and then now Ms. Hazel. I have not experienced any of those problems. I have always, one time I woke him up one morning because I called at 7:30. Once I learned when he got up in the morning, I was fine. But I've been chair twice, vice chair twice. I've never had one crossword. You know, he's heard a lot from me, but he has broad shoulders. He was able to take it, and he was able to counsel me in the best ways possible. Somebody who's very, very well, he has a lot of experience with school boards. Last year when I was chair, he did provide us with a copy of his contract. He did send it out, and then because we were going through the COVID stuff. I think it was around this time last year. Was it in March you gave it to us? But then 2 or 3 months went by. And then I said, well, we need to, it was starting to be up. I think it was the end of June. And so he reached out and said, do you guys have any more comments about his contract? Nobody did. I mean, nobody, I don't know if you contacted him. So when it was brought up at our board meeting, and when we went to vote, that's when the discussion started. So I thought when the contract was put out to you, then you could have said, you could have brought up those issues at that time. The same thing that happened when we did our public participation policy. It was sent out ahead of time, and then we postponed it for a while because of COVID. And then I did ask Mr. Penley to reissue that policy back out. Nobody had any issues with it. And then during a workshop, it started to unravel and be pulled apart. So I concur with Mr. Persis. It needs to be a private matter. It's an issue that I have not experienced. So I really can't, I would not be able to really participate too much in the conversation
because the process that I have found has worked for me. So, I mean, I can sympathize with Ms. Haynes' situation, but I can't empathize because I haven't experienced that. So I'm very content at this point with his contract. I think at one point when we, as a board, as you all, as a board, not myself, hire another when his contract is out, if you deem not to have it renewed, at that point, write a new contract. You know, that could be something, you know, for a future one. But at this point, I don't think it's necessary to have a workshop. I think we're right in the middle of budget time. We have a new school year to get started. We have lots of work to do in hiring a new superintendent. We have an awful lot of priority, plus our legislative priorities coming up this fall. We have an awful lot of issues right now that I think have more of a public priority. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Burnett.
Thank you. So when we attended the joint meeting, the Florida Board School Board Association meeting last year, it was brought up in one of our courses that the legal team should have an evaluation. So I do think that we need to have a workshop and create a legal evaluation. And if we want to, I've already reached out to an FSBA member right after that and asked for some ideas for formulating a tool of such. But Ms. Cuthbert, I'm going back and looking at my emails, and I don't see where I was ever included on an email with Mr. Doran's or any legal contract in June.
I didn't send it out.
I'm looking through the emails that I was sent by him. And I did not receive that. Now, I could be wrong, but I keep all my emails. And so when it became on the agenda, it was news to me. So I don't recall having any of that in my emails.
I'm sure Mr. Doran will go back.
I felt like I was going to say something else. But anyway, I do support putting something together to do a workshop to set it up. And I think that we need to have standards. And if the standards are in other counties, if that's what they do, then that's what we should do. Also, on the email that we were sent by Ms. Karen not long ago, back in, say, March, there was an email that came to us describing a policy 103. On policy 103, which, by the way, hasn't been updated since 2003, it does say that the retention of the school board attorney shall be placed on the agenda at the first meeting in July of each year. So I don't know. That kind of contradicts the contract that we agreed upon. A proposed fee schedule and any additional amendments to the contract between the school board and the school board attorney shall also be considered at that time. So to me, when you look at this policy that we have, we're out of policy. Just saying. So we're out of policy. It should be a yearly contract. Thank you.
Ms. Haynes.
So if we go back to last June when that came up on the agenda, which I think it was June 22nd. Okay. I had no email from the fall, or I had no email telling me that in June we were going to have to decide on Mr. Doran's contract. And I think that came out that night. I could be wrong. I'm happy to go back and look at the video. But I think that came out that night because Dr. Fritz got a little upset and said, well, you only have two employees and it's not our job to tell you when their contracts are coming up. I mean, that's what he said, sitting right here next to me. And he said, it's your job to know it. And so I at that time did a search of all my emails also, and I didn't have anything prior to coming into that meeting and it being on the agenda that night where I knew that that's when it was coming up. And if you think about it, part of it was because it was 5 years also. And so 5 years is longer than what any of us serve, you know, depending on when we run, because we only serve 4-year terms. So it was done at some point. His last 5 years was done at some point with a previous board, and then it came to us on June 22nd without any chance to look at it. And And I just believed, you know, this is what you've done, because you heard me that night ask about state statutes, and because laws change, you know. We may have a law that says this at one point, but it changes to another piece. But I just did another search, and I never received anything since the time I've been on the board about when Mr. Doran's contract would come up or a copy of his contract. And, you know, I can accept ownership that I didn't ask for that, okay? But I think it's just still something that has to be a part of a packet of whenever anyone is coming on. I think they should receive the copies of the contracts for the two employees that the board oversees, along with these are the due dates of when they'll come back up and an understanding. But, you know, if we have a policy that also says this, we're just in contradiction. And I kind of said to the two of you, because both of you have been chairs and you've gone through the training, here we went and went through, you know, reached that point. Because remember, some of the training was shut down during COVID. We go to the training and learn that, you know, all these other districts have one-year contracts. That doesn't mean that they don't keep renewing them. Do you know what I'm saying? But they also do evaluation pieces with it. And I first said it in January, I believe. Then I said it again in February. Then I put it in this email. And so I'm just bringing it back up because, if nothing else, maybe we'll have to change the policy because we're not even following our school board policy. And so I think there needs to be some form of a discussion because we got to go one way or the other on something.
All right. So, again, you know, we are in a three-year contract with Mr. Doran currently, and for me, that's not so much what's in question as much as the actual do we want as a board to have a discussion about an evaluation instrument that would allow Mr. Doran feedback on where the board is. Sounds like there's consensus of three. I don't know when we will.
As usual. Well,
that's why there's five of us.
I mean,
again, and so
if you are talking about something, if you're talking about an evaluation for this year, for the 21-22 year, which his annual thing, you know, ends in June. So you wouldn't want to. I mean, if you're talking about creating an evaluation instrument for which we would evaluate Mr. Doran by a year from now,
that's what I'm talking about. Again, we're talking about future state.
Okay,
we're talking about, at least I am, I can speak for me, talking about an evaluation instrument that will provide feedback to any attorney, whoever it is in the future.
Exactly. So, Mr. Chair, along that line, then I would say there's no sense of urgency.
Well, we'd have to find the time to put it in.
You know, there's no, with everything else we got going the next 6 weeks, I mean, it's pedal to the metal with everybody. And I do think we would certainly not just want to sit here in a vacuum and create this. We would want to have a Florida School Board Association person share with us what other districts are doing, guide us through the process. I mean, if you really want to do it right, we need a professional consultant to come in here in a workshop, and we knock it out in probably 2 or 3 hours max, I'm sure. You know, but I mean, let's not just add it, since it's not going to affect anything between now and 30th, right?
Yeah, and, we can certainly get it added. I don't know exactly when, Ms. Haynes. I mean, only because we have how many meetings in May? Do we have two?
We have one.
Because and then one. Budget and all of that. But I think that
one in July as well.
One in July. So again, you know, I think just with that, and I don't know what topics Ms. Hazel has for that, but you know, we can certainly look at that if there is a consensus. To look at it at the next available date. Again, I want to emphasize, for me, this is not about Mr. Doran. This is about an instrument, which I've actually seen samples of some districts that have them, and it's certainly something we can look at. Anybody else have Ms. Burnett?
I mean, since I've come on the board, many a times I've brought up following policy. So when I bring it up, or when she brought it up, it's because I remembered when you asked Mr. Dorn to send those to us, reading it, and I'm like, well, we're out of policy. And you can ask Mr. Penley. I'm constantly asking him about what are we doing as far as policy and procedure. And that's something we do at the hospital is we follow policy and procedures. And that's one of my goals is to help us get more in line with following policy. So,
well, then let's address the policy. Put the policy on the agenda.
Yeah. And we went to the FSBA, and we were all in those meetings where they said that. I think that that's part of the policy. So, thank you.
This is big picture. I'm not looking little picture. I'm looking big picture.
Agreed.
I just don't want it to be a ruse to fire the school board attorney. And I'm very gun shy right now. I'm very gun shy. I've been through too many leaders. And it's enough's enough. I just don't want it to be a ruse.
I think it's a conversation.
I'm not accusing anybody. I just don't want, it to happen.
I just think it's a conversation on us getting to be into standards and follow policy.
Which policy, 103? So consensus on bringing back policy 103 for revisiting, seeing as it hasn't been looked at since 2003.
That's fine. Can we at least get the school year started?
At the next available
okay.
workshop. And I'll work with Ms. Hazel to figure that out. Nods. Consensus is unanimous. Very good. Anybody else have anything? Hearing none, everyone have a great night, and thank you.
Thank you.
Yay.